In this world there's a whole lot of trouble, baby. In this world there's a whole lot of pain. In this world there's a whole lot of trouble, but a whole lot of ground to gain. Why take when you could be giving? Why watch as the world goes by? It's a hard enough life to be living. Why walk when you can fly? There's a whole lot of sorrow. In this world, there's a whole lot of shame. In this world, there's a whole lot of sorrow and a whole lot of ground to gain. When you spend your whole life wishing, wanting and wondering why, it's a long enough life to be living. Why walk when you can fly?
News break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Michael Stinson in Hawaii.
George W. Bush is facing increasing dissent among leading conservative politicians and pundits in the face of mounting U.S. casualties in Iraq. The war has become the long slog that some Republicans feared. Since Sunday, 35 Americans have been killed in fighting across Iraq. American body bags are on the front page of major U.S. newspapers. A Pew Research Center national survey conducted this week shows that the majority of Americans now disapprove of Bush's handling of the war in Iraq. Adding to the GOP dilemma, on Election Day, there is more at stake for Republicans than the White House alone. Militiamen loyal to an anti-U.S. Shiite cleric controlled large swaths of three Iraqi cities Thursday after clashes with coalition forces, while U.S. Marines fought for the second day around a mosque in the Sunni Muslim stronghold of Fajua. Fighting this week has left 35 Americans and at least 459 Iraqis dead. The intensified violence has forced the U.S. military to consider sending more troops to Iraq and to postpone the removal of forces due to rotate out. You can be certain that if they want more troops, we will sign deployment orders so they will have the troops they need, Defense Secretary Donald H. Rumsfeld said at a Pentagon news conference Wednesday, though he insisted fighting was not spinning out of control. Al-Sadir, said to be holed up in his office in Najaf surrounded by gunmen, issued a statement saying Iraq would become another Vietnam for the United States. Firebrand Shiite cleric Muqtada Sadir's militia said it was holding Spanish hostages and possibly an American whom they planned to swap for one of their own Najaf-based leaders, Mustafa Yakubi, arrested by coalition forces Saturday. We hold coalition hostages, most of them Spaniards, and possibly a U.S. soldier whom we want to swap against Mustafa al-Yakubi, said Amar al-Husseini, a spokesman for Sadr and Baghdad Shiite bastion of Sadr City. The U.S.-led coalition was not immediately available for comment. Yakubi, like Sadr, is implicated in the murder of a rival pro-American cleric last year.
More after this.
Hello, I'm Rita Moreno. You may have a serious eye condition and not even know it. Vision loss is not a normal part of aging. Some vision changes are normal. Some are due to eye disease. Do you know the difference? Open your eyes to the facts. To get more information about vision and aging or to find out about what help is available if you're having vision problems, call Lighthouse International at 1-800-829-0500 or visit www.lighthouse.org.
A British man who has sold all his possessions, including his clothes, will stand in a rented tuxedo on Sunday and bet everything on a single spin of the roulette wheel. If he wins, he doubles his money. If he loses, he will be left only with a television crew documenting his every move. Ashley Revelle, a 32-year-old Londoner, said he was worth about £75,000 after he sold everything in March. Revelle said he'd planned to have a friend videotape his bet it all spin, but Sky One Television decided it was worth a short reality series called Double or Nothing. For a Minuteman News Service, this is Michael Stinson in Hawaii.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
You can tell when a corporation has been caught doing bad things just by watching television. Not the news, the commercials. The stinkier the corporation, the more commercials you'll see extolling the pure sweetness of the company. The latest to saturate the airwaves with ads is Halliburton. And does it ever need them? Dick Cheney's old outfit has a heap of stink on it, starting with the fact that it magically got some $9 billion worth of no-bid contracts from the Bush-Cheney Pentagon to provide such services in occupied Iraq as gasoline, running the mess halls, and bath towels for the GIs. And Halliburton has been ripping us off on all of this stuff. The company is now under assorted criminal investigations for grossly overcharging us on the gasoline, serving spoiled food in the mess halls, and supplying towels bearing its own logo, charging $3 each for them when non-logo towels are much cheaper. Halliburton has gotten so stinky that it's become a political issue in the presidential campaign. Even George W. has had to criticize its profiteering. So now, we're suddenly subjected to ads showing Halliburton accomplishing miracles in Iraq. Ads that use our soldiers and the Iraqi people as props to justify its bilking of U.S. taxpayers. How defensive is Halliburton? So defensive that it felt compelled to make an ad trying to separate itself from its cozy ties to Cheney. We're serving the troops, says this hilarious pitch, because of what we know, not who we know. But the company has also gone on the offensive, in both senses of that word. Its CEO, in a statement that is both cynical and whiny, attacked all who dare criticize Halliburton, saying that they are guilty of political profiteering. This is Jim Hightower saying, what a greedhead! Halliburton profiteers on this war, uses some of those war profits to whitewash its actions, and then tries labeling its taxpaying critics as profiteers.
Well, I wonder who that could be. Can I help you?
Ah! Everybody, run for your lives!
A pack of crazed baboons. That's one thing you don't want in your house. One thing you do want in your house is a quieter floor with Blactanium plywood from Georgia Pacific. Blactanium holds onto nails better. That means your subflooring won't rub against them and will be less likely to squeak. Blactanium plywood. Build it better.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too. But who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling?
Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman with you, broadcasting live, coast to coast, border to border. Live on terrestrial radio stations from California to North Carolina, streaming down from the depths of outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, beaming around the planet on radiopower.org, our web radio station, listener-supported station, and with archives at whiterosesociety.org. You can find it all at tomhartman.com. Also, links to our chat room, which is already full of folks. We've been, in fact, having a conversation there during Condi Rice's testimony. Absolutely mind-boggling here. It's Sheldon. Also, I want to start right out here. We've got Sheldon Rampton, who was the co-author of the book Weapons of Mass Deception, The Uses of Propaganda in Bush's War on Iraq. Sheldon, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
I'm pleased to have you here. You're also the editor of PR Watch, and you guys do a great job of just keeping track of the spin coming out of here. Sheldon, I want to play a clip here for you from this morning's testimony. This, I thought, was the blockbuster, and it's going to be really interesting to watch the rats scurry under this one. Listen to this. If we've got it here. Hang on just a second. Something has... Yep. Here we go.
Isn't it a fact, Dr. Rice, that the August 6th PDB warned against possible attacks in this country? And I...
Now, this presidential daily briefing, August 6th, the George Bush is at his ranch in Crawford, Texas. After he gets this thing, what does he do? Well, he's afraid of horses, so he doesn't go riding on a horse. But he goes out with his chainsaw and he cuts some brush. Well, let's continue.
Afraid of chainsaws?
He's not afraid of chainsaws. He is afraid of horses. That's why he bought a pig farm. But anyhow, here we continue with this thing.
I ask you whether you recall the title of that PDB.
I believe the title was Bin Laden Determined to Attack Inside the United States.
Boom. And then we get into the advice that apparently Condi Rice had. When she was set up for this thing, I'll bet anything that they sat down with her and they said, okay, each one of these guys has 10 minutes. Half of them are going to be on your side, half of them not. The ones who are going to be really hard on you, don't give them an opportunity to ask questions. Instead, talk as much as you can. Repeat your points over and over and over again. Don't give them a chance to get a word in edgewise. And in fact, here she goes.
Now, the PDB, no, Mr. I would like to finish my point here.
I didn't know there
given
was
that
a point.
You asked me whether or not it warned of attacks.
I asked you what the title was.
And on she goes. I'm assuming that you heard all this.
Yeah, and what you say, about, the idea of just, fill as much space as you can and repeat your message points over and over again. That's actually, a textbook what a public relations advisor advises someone who's being grilled by a reporter.
Right.
Their point is, if a reporter wants to interview you for an hour, you can break that down. If you've got 10 minutes worth of message points, you make a point of repeating them several times, and that pretty much fills your hour. And basically that's what Condi Rice did here. She had a few points that she wanted to repeat over and over again. The most they got out of her that was new was the revelation of the name of the August 6th briefing, Bin Laden determined to attack in the United States. And other than that, I don't think they got much out of her that was new information. And it's because she spent so much time repeating her packaged message points.
Right, and they had cut this marvelous deal. Condi Rice gets to speak, or Condi Rice will speak. But it's limited to 2 hours. So she gets to filibuster. And not only that, then George and Dick get to do Dick and his sock puppet show, where George will not testify unless Dick is sitting next to him and able to answer his questions and finish his sentences for him. And it won't be under oath.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that to me is probably the most interesting thing about Condi's testimony is that as a condition for her testifying, they impose these strict rules. You can't, number one, you can't ever ask her to come back and say anything more, and you can't ask anyone else in the White House to come back. It's probably the most interesting thing about Condi's testimony is that as a condition for her testifying, they impose these strict rules. You can't, number one, you can't ever ask her to come back and say anything more, and you can't ask anyone else in the White House to come back and say anything more either. So basically, they got 2.5 hours with Condoleezza Rice, where they could ask her questions, and she had to weather that. And now they figure they're home free. They never have to answer another question under oath in front of the public again.
Yeah, we're talking with Sheldon Rampton, the co-author of Weapons of Mass Deception, The Uses of Propaganda in Bush's War in Iraq, and editor of PR Watch. Sheldon, what are the other uses of propaganda that Bush has used in this war in Iraq?
Well, I think probably a lot of your listeners know them. I mean, the main points they drove home over and over again were that Iraq had, huge stockpiles of weapons of mass destruction, that Iraq was linked in an operational way to al-Qaeda. They hinted broadly that in fact, Iraq had been the mastermind that plotted September 11. And the third one that I think is unraveling very dramatically before our eyes right now is the idea that the people of Iraq would welcome us as liberators once we got into Iraq. Those are the three main points, and they deliver those points the way spin doctors do, through a mixture of truths, semi-truths, and outright lies. But lying as rarely as possible, and mostly delivering their message by selectively presenting information and by exaggerating or distorting. So over and over again, you had people like Condi Rice or Rumsfeld saying, we know that he has weapons of mass destruction. Rumsfeld even said, we know where they're located. We know that that he has an active nuclear weapons program. We know that he's been supplying Al-Qaeda with chemical and biological weapons. You know, they said a lot of things and claimed that they knew them when clearly they didn't know them. The most they had on those things was ambiguous intelligence information, and so clearly they you know, to say they know those things when they don't know them is a lie.
Yeah, and now this morning the main thrust, it seemed, of Condi's testimony was, we didn't know. Isn't that ironic? We didn't know. We couldn't have imagined. We didn't. And what I thought was particular, there was a particularly poignant moment when one of the questioners was saying, okay, you have said that the FBI, you know, that you were shaking the trees, you were trying to find this stuff, that there had been this directive to find information, and yet we have gone over a million documents, we've read thousands of pages of testimony, we've talked to hundreds of people, and we can't find one person within the FBI who says that they were told to be looking for this kind of stuff.
Right, and then he went on and said, you know, even if we had been shaking the trees, it probably wouldn't have done any good.
Right. And even though that's how the previous attacks were stopped. What else did you get out of the testimony this morning, Sheldon, that you thought was significant?
Well, I mean, I thought that, you know, certain parts of it were kind of predictable in the way that, you know, she was clearly at pains to push all the responsibility for what happened on September 11 back far enough into the past that it happened before the Bush administration took office. She repeated over and over again that we only had 233 days. She kept using that phrase, you know, before this event happened. And so she pushed the event, the blame back to the Clinton administration. But even further, I mean, she went as far back as talking about you know, failures to respond to the Nazis for violating the Treaty of Versailles. I mean, she got very philosophical and you know, I mean, she is an academic, and I think she played that to her advantage. Of, you know, she also spent a lot of time talking about, in rather vague terms, about the need for structural and systemic changes. And in a way, you know, when you talk about structural and systemic changes, because you're not talking about any people.
This is just a fancy way of saying it's all Clinton's fault.
Right.
I mean, you know, we were only in there 230. We, you know, it's a structural all these years, and the subtext, and I guarantee you those little clips will be being played on right wing radio and in the news ad infinitum. The subtext was, it's all Bill Clinton's fault. Blame it on Clinton. That's the official policy of this administration, it seems.
The other thing that kind of surprised me or struck me was that she seemed to be taking great pains to avoid challenging Richard Clark's testimony. She was generally, you know, if you didn't know that she's been on television and that he's sharply criticized the administration and that she has sharply attacked his testimony, you'd think they were best friends. You know, she praised him repeatedly and so forth. And I think that was very strategic and deliberate, because Dick Clark has opened a big can of worms in terms of questioning not just the Bush administration's response leading up to September 11, but its response following September 11. And I think she was very deliberately trying to avoid saying anything that could create an opening where someone would say, well, you know, what about this and what about this and what about that?
Yeah. Do you think it was Clinton's fault?
Do I think it was Clinton's fault?
I mean, if that's going to be the subtext of the Republicans, you know, what about?
I think it was first Bin Laden's fault, but I think it's clear from what we know that there could have been more done prior to September 11. That there could, you know, I mean, the Clinton administration did have plans in the works that were pretty detailed, developed by Dick Clark, that did sit on the shelf for, you know,
230 days.
Dust them off and look at them, you know, in the weeks before September 11. By which time, of course, it's too late to expect to do anything. But that doesn't mean that the Bush administration could have stopped September 11. In some ways, you know, if you want to place blame, you know, that really depends on your framework of interpretation. I mean, you could blame the September 11 attacks on the Reagan administration for for its unholy alliance with the Mujahideen in Afghanistan in the 1980s, if you wanted. You could blame the Bush administration for the first Bush administration for the war in Iraq that created, which was the occasion when the United States first established military bases in Saudi Arabia, which was the kind of point of irritation that has Osama bin Laden and so many people in the Arab and Muslim world angry.
Yeah, in fact, it was Osama's in his letter that was published in the New York Times. He didn't write it to the New York Times, but I mean, you know, in his initial declaring of war on America, he said it's because we have our troops on after the Gulf War. We left troops in Saudi Arabia, and he wanted them out. Of course, the Bush administration has now gotten them out. 1-866-889-8894. We're talking with Sheldon Rampton, who is the co-author of Weapons of Mass Deception: Uses of Propaganda in Bush's War in Iraq, and editor of PR Watch. We got about 30 seconds here with Sheldon. Dave and Eureka, quick question. Dave,
are you speaking to me? Okay, yes. There were four things that needed to come up that weren't brought up at all there. The ongoing plan to invade Iraq from the administration from day one.
Okay, Dave, I want to ask you to hold that right there.
Okay.
Sheldon, hang on. We'll be right back. This is the Tom Hartman radio program. 20 minutes past the hour. Condi Rice, did she muddy the waters or clarify? And what's the future of America's relationship with the war on terror? 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America, Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
You.
What?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Yeah, okay. Can you tell me who Louis Armstrong was?
He was the first guy on the moon.
Mm.
You know, one small step for man.
Maybe they're not getting enough art. Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more, visit AmericansForTheArts.org, because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance and Armstrong's horn. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and...
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. New research conducted by the Center for Labor Market Studies at Northeastern University confirms what many workers already know. They're getting the short end of the stick. Since the end of 2001, American workers have had the lowest share of the national income on record, meaning they're producing more and getting less. Corporate profits got a larger percent share of the wealth from increased production, 41% went to corporations, with labor receiving only 38%.
Setting up a radio station? Wondering what software to use? Listen to the words of Mike Chandler of WOBS in Florida talking about the Tune Tracker system.
I love the software. I mean, it is rock solid. It has not burped one single time. This thing has not stopped. And I tell you, I've got some software that I run at two of my other radio stations that cost tons and tons more. One I paid, I think, $1,500 for it. And then one system, which was the Arrakis DigiLink system, I paid $15,000 for it. But this rivals my $15,000 system.
As Mike Chandler said, the Tune Tracker system is rock solid. And the price? Only $349.95 for the pro version with traffic interface and only $149.95 for the original Tune Tracker 2. Either way, you'll have a radio automation system that performs like systems costing thousands more. For more information, go to our website, www.tunetrackersystems.com. www.tunetrackersystems.com.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Well, I woke up this morning, stumbled out of my rack. I opened up the paper to the page in the back. It only took a minute for my finger to find my daily dose of destiny under my sign. Stacked against you, girl. Get back in.
And welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. The stars stacked against Condi today. It's an interesting question. Actually, I thought she did very well as an apologist for the administration and filibustering these things. Dave in California, you were making your points here.
Well, as I had feared, and I think you had too from the beginning, there were several key points that needed to be addressed to her that were not. And the first one was that we have a lot of evidence that it was the ongoing plan from day one of the Bush administration to find a reason to invade Iraq, and she had nobody asked her to comment on that. Two, that there was a jumbo jet allowed to fly about the country picking up Al-Qaeda family and depart the country while all of the planes were grounded, and she wasn't asked to touch upon that.
See, Dave, I think this is why she was filibustering. I think this is why she was going on and on and on whenever anybody who might have asked one of those questions was asking her questions.
Right. Well, the third one that's also, Clark had brought it up, that if in World War II Japan invaded Hawaii, we used that as an excuse to invade Mexico, and certainly that was what was done to invade Iraq, which he still contends was not the culprit on this one. The fourth one is that Condoleezza had been able to warn several of her friends, including Attorney General Ashcroft, not to be in an airplane on that day. Why would you do that, Condi?
Yeah, these were good questions. Dave, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Excellent. Sheldon Rampton, co-author of Weapons of Mass Deception, The Uses of Propaganda in Bush's War in Iraq, and editor of PR Watch. Your thoughts on why none of those questions got asked?
Well, I mean, part of it, of course, is that the specific mandate of this commission is to look into what went wrong that enabled September 11 specifically to happen. The thing is, though, that everyone knows that question is closely tied to the question of why we're at war in Iraq. And Condoleezza Rice brought that up herself several times. I mean, she tried to make the argument that the reason we're in a war in Iraq is because the Bush administration is being strategic and looking at the big picture and trying to clean up the whole mess that breeds terrorism rather than just specifically go after, just specifically respond to individual terrorist attacks.
Which is a fancy rhetorical way of saying, let's put our footprint in Iraq in the middle of the Middle East, right?
Right. And that's the big question. That's the reason that Richard Clark is so controversial. Because he is saying the war on Iraq was what they were gearing up to do before September 11, and by doing it after September 11, they've detracted from focusing on what our real priorities need to be.
That it was a distraction.
And, I thought all of the commission members carefully stayed away from bringing that up. Even though, as I say, Condoleezza Rice made her case repeatedly in support of the war in Iraq, They never challenged her on that point. She was kind of given a fair amount of leeway, I think, to just kind of pontificate and philosophize about the need for the Bush administration's policies. She was clearly lobbying for the for further extensions of the USA Patriot Act. So a lot of her testimony actually consisted not so much of talking about what went wrong on 9/11, but actually is talking about why we need to support the Bush administration's policies now after 9/11.
Right,
and,
but they
let her do that, but they never asked her the questions about those policies.
Yeah, well, they sort of let her do that. I mean, they kept trying to interrupt her and get her back on track, and she kept refusing. She kept saying, you know, sir, you asked me a question, I'm trying to blah-de-blah-de-blah. We've been talking with Sheldon Rampton. Sheldon, thank you very much for being with us. Weapons, author of Weapons of Mass Deception, The Uses of Propaganda in Bush's War in Iraq, and editor of PR Watch. Sheldon, you guys are doing great. What's the URL there?
www.prwatch.org. We also have another site called our Disinfopedia, D-I-S-I-N-F-O-pedia. It's like an encyclopedia of propaganda, disinfopedia.org.
That's a great one. Sheldon, thank you very much for being with us today. I appreciate
it.
It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Craig and, I don't see where you are, Craig, but anyhow, Craig and Tom in Grand Rapids, hang on. We'll pick up your calls just on the other side of this break. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned.
When Bush got into the driver's seat, he took over the largest surplus in American history and turned that surplus into the largest deficit in history. The U.S. economy has lost 3.3 million jobs, the most since the Great Depression. Then Bush drove us into war with Iraq. We're losing lives. We're hemorrhaging money. And these costs are driving our country closer to bankruptcy. Just where does George Bush think he's taking...
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. An unreported bomb threat leaves three unions representing Northwest Airlines employees steamed. One plane was searched in Detroit, another was searched in Los Angeles, and a third in both Memphis, Tennessee, and Miami. Grievances were filed by the Professional Flight Attendants Association, the International Association of Machinist and Aerospace Workers, and the Aircraft Mechanics Fraternal Association. The unions want specific protocol for immediately informing airline employees of any threat.
Tyson Foods faces new unfair labor practice charges from two meatpacking plants. Workers at Tyson's Wallula, Washington facility vote on whether to decertify their union today. And leading up to the vote, Teamsters Local 556 claims Tyson offered people promotions and bonuses for voting no on the union and peppered the plant with stickers urging the same. Tyson's contract with the Teamsters in Washington State expires at the end of May. At the Tyson plant in Jefferson, Wisconsin, United Food and Commercial Workers Local 538 is asking the National Labor Relations Board to force Tyson to rehire workers that went on strike for nearly a year against a contract offer that cut their wages and benefits. As part of its settlement in January, Tyson promised to take back the strikers but reserved the right to put them in entry-level jobs. Two-thirds of them still await the call back to work. A petition to decertify the UFCW local at the Jefferson Packing House is already pending at the NLRB, filed by the replacement workers brought in during the strike. A ruling on that effort is expected before the end of the month.
More than 1,000 Rhode Island home care workers have the green light to join a labor union thanks to a ruling Tuesday by the State Labor Relations Board. Home child care providers are mostly women who care for up to 6 children in their homes or up to 8 with an assistant. These workers will now have 60 days to vote on whether or not to join the AFL-CIO Family Child Care Providers Union, gaining state benefits and a unified voice regarding working conditions.
Walmart's referendum to circumvent the city of Inglewood, California, and build a small retail village exempt from city oversight failed Tuesday. The company took its development to the ballot box after the Inglewood City Council overwhelmingly rejected it. Voter turnout was 29%. 60% said no.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
Beyond plunging the federal budget into a record deficit, the Bush tax cuts shifted the tax burden significantly. According to United for a Fair Economy, corporate taxes have dropped 67% compared to a 17% increase in individual taxes. Meanwhile, states are shouldering more of the tax burden. Collectively, they've seen a 15% increase in their share of taxes.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Just a poor boy, though my story is seldom told. I squandered my resistance for a pocket full of mumbles, such are promises. All lies and jest, till a man hears what he wants to hear and disregards the rest.
And welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Condi Rice admitting the title. Now, keep in mind, August 6th, George Bush gets this presidential daily briefing. And everybody's been wondering, what could it have been? Because a number of things happened. First of all, he gets this thing, and he goes on the longest vacation in the history of the American presidency, going all the way back to George Washington, when it was largely viewed that citizen statesmen was a part-time job, when the legislature only met out of 3 months out of the year. And even George Washington didn't take vacations as long as this. This was the longest vacation out of town, hiding out, in the history of the presidency. George Bush goes down to Crawford, Texas. He gets his memo. And then, after that, he won't go back to Washington, D.C. He goes to Florida. And he apparently tells John Ashcroft about it, because John Ashcroft stops flying on commercial airplanes. Well, today we found out the title of that presidential daily briefing. Here's Condi Rice in the middle of trying to, you know, not wanting to answer the questions of the questioner here. I believe this was Ben Veneste. Instead, but you know, she's kind of put in a corner here.
Isn't it a fact, Dr. Rice, that the August 6th PDB warned against possible attacks in this country? And I ask you whether you recall the title of that PDB.
And here it comes, folks. This should be the headline on every newspaper in America. We will see if it is.
I believe the title was Bin Laden Determined to Attack Inside the United States.
Waha! April, August 6th. Bin Laden Determined to Attack Within the United States. And then, of course, this is one of the guys who might have gone on and said, well, you know, why then were you planning Iraq policy? I mean, you know, he had a long list of questions. She wasn't going to let him get to his questions. Instead, she wanted to just keep on ranting.
I would like to finish my point here.
I didn't know there
given
was
that
a point.
You asked me whether or not it warned of attacks.
And I asked you what the title was.
Yeah, and on she goes. Claims versus fact. Claim. This is from Condi Rice's opening statement. We decided immediately to continue pursuing the Clinton administration's covert action authorities and other efforts to fight the network. This is what she said under oath today. Here's the fact. This from the Center for American Progress, David Sirota. Newsweek reported that in the months, and I quote from Newsweek, in the months before 9/11, the U.S. Justice Department curtailed a highly classified program called Catcher's Mitt to monitor al-Qaeda suspects in the United States, end quote. Additionally, the Associated Press reported, quote, though Predator drones spotted Osama bin Laden as many as three times in late 2000, the Bush administration did not fly the unmanned planes over Afghanistan during its first 8 months, end quote, thus terminating the reconnaissance mission started during the Clinton administration. Additionally, quote, the military successfully tested an armed Predator throughout the first half of 2001, but the White House failed to resolve a debate over whether the CIA or the Pentagon
should operate the armed predators, and therefore the armed predator never got off the ground before 9/11. Yeah, sure. We were following up on the policies of the Bush administration. 1-866-889-8894. Craig in Memphis, Tennessee is on the line. Hey, Craig, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. I think Craig is there. Maybe Craig is not. Craig, I'm going to put you on hold, and well, actually, Craig, we're just going to move along. Sorry. Tom in Grand Rapids is on the line. Hey, Tom, what's up? Tom in Grand Rapids? Oh, I'm sorry. This is Craig in Memphis, and I just dropped Tom in Grand Rapids. I got it backwards.
Hello, can you hear me now?
Hey, Craig. Yes, I'm sorry. My fault.
Okay.
And my apologies to Tom in Grand Rapids. Call back, and we'll put you on. I'm sorry. I'm pushing the wrong buttons here. What's up?
Well, I just want to start out by saying I'm a Texas Republican. I voted for Bush, and after hearing Condi's testimony, I am absolutely sick to my stomach.
Yeah, it was an extraordinary job of holding off the dogs. You know, I mean, she did such a good job of filibustering the people that she knew were going to ask her the hard questions, of giving that, you know, she knew that they had exactly 10 minutes to ask questions and for her to answer. And they would ask a question, and she would take 3, 4, 5 minutes to answer it. And they only wanted a 30. And then when the friendly questioners came in, you know, question, answer, question, answer, question, answer, you know, she let them have, it was amazing.
I think she actually sank herself, though, when she was rambling on. Let me kind of put this together. In January 25th, she got information. Well, it didn't tell me to do anything. In July, we got all this information. It didn't tell me to do anything. August 5th, the same thing. Her people were feeding her information, and she was not telling them to do anything. She was blowing off the information.
Yeah, and the amazing thing, I thought she almost blamed Ashcroft. I mean, there was an open hole there, and she essentially, they said, you know, well, why wasn't the FBI looking into this stuff? And she said, well, I'm not the director of the FBI or something to that effect. And it's super clear to me from Condi's testimony that John Ashcroft has a lot of things to answer for right now. Of course, he won't under oath because the White House cut a deal that if Condi testifies, nobody else from the administration will ever be asked to testify under oath before this commission. So it's amazing.
Yeah, I'm absolutely sick to my stomach. Just the fact that they were just, it's almost a matter of arrogance, I believe, in the administration. They came in and they said, well, you know what, we're going to do things completely different and you guys don't. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. Yep. Craig, thanks for the call. 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to be on the air. A couple of the other claim. This is from Condoleezza Rice's testimony this morning under oath. She said, the strategy set as its goal the elimination of the Al-Qaeda network. Now, a little later on, it was pointed out to her that even though she had said that, that's not actually what the documents said. And she ultimately had to agree. Anyhow, this is for her testimony, her initial testimony. The strategy set at its goal the elimination of the Al-Qaeda network. It ordered the leadership of relevant U.S. departments and agencies to make the elimination of Al-Qaeda a high priority and to use all aspects of our national power, intelligence, financial, diplomatic, and military to meet this goal. Now, here's what happened when on 324, Richard Armitage was questioned. Commissioner Gorelick, Jamie Gorelick, said, is it true, as Dr. Rice said, quote, our plan called for military options to attack Al-Qaeda and Taliban leadership, end quote. Now, this is under oath. She's asking Richard Armitage. And he says, and I quote, no. I think that was amended after the horror of 9/11. Claim versus fact. And what are your thoughts on this? 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to call in. Claim, Condi Rice, this morning, we bolstered the Treasury Department's activities to track and seize terrorist assets. She said that this morning. Fact. The new Bush Treasury Department, quote, disapproved of the Clinton administration's approach to money laundering issues, which had been an important part of the drive to cut off the money flow to bin Laden. You remember this? I remember when this happened. It was the Wall Street Journal did a really interesting article about this. The Clinton administration had put into place these rules to stop money laundering. and you know, make it more difficult. And they were also, those rules also made it more difficult for wealthy people in the United States to hide their assets overseas, and for multinational corporations to shelter some of their income, to hide, basically to hide what they were doing so they didn't have to pay taxes on it. And the Bush administration came out and opposed, openly, aggressively opposed these. So anyhow, Condi Rice says, we bolstered the Treasury Department's activities to track and seize terrorist assets. Here's the fact. The new Bush Treasury Department, quote, disapproved of the Clinton administration's approach to money laundering issues, which had been an important part of the drive to cut off the money flow to bin Laden, end quote. Specifically, the Bush administration opposed Clinton administration-backed efforts by the G7 and the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development that targeted countries with, quote, loose banking regulations, end quote, being abused by terrorist financiers. See, they were also being abused by George Bush's buddy and probably his family, by the very wealthy elite of America, to hide their income. Meanwhile, the Bush administration provided no funding for the new National Terrorist Asset Tracking Center. No funding. 1-866-889-8894. Chris in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Chris, what's up?
Not a great deal. You know, I'll bet John Kerry is happy to know that no matter what happens, the first 7 months of his administration are a completely free ride, because, after all, you can't expect anything to be accomplished in the first 7 months of a presidential administration.
Oh, those first 233 days, all we can do is take a vacation.
Yeah. You know, watching this whole thing is kind of a sort of not very convincing low theater, you know. The best question that was asked, I thought, was asked by, interestingly enough, former Governor Thompson, a Republican. And the question was, I'm paraphrasing, look, you're the National Security Advisor to the President of the United States. Don't you take any responsibility for dropping the ball on this?
Right. He said that the buck stops with the President, but the buck travels through you to the President. Yeah.
She just sort of slipped the question, of course, as she did all through her testimony.
Yeah. Yeah. She
take care, man.
She weaseled out. Thanks a lot. Good to hear from you, Chris. 1-866-889-8894, 16 minutes before the hour. Dean in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, Dean, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Thanks, Tom. You know, the money issue has always appeared to me to be one of the best places to go in terms of just tracking who knew what. I mean, doesn't the CIA have that software that monitors real-time trading? And isn't it the fact that Buzzy Kronyard, who's high up there in the CIA, was a member of the Deutsche Bank? And isn't the Deutsche Bank the bank that placed most of the put options for 9/11? I haven't really heard much discussion, but apparently there were people that made millions, if not trillions, of dollars on this. And
it was millions, yeah.
Yeah, so why is there no discussion of that, and it hasn't been brought up to my knowledge in all these hearings?
Yeah, it hasn't been brought up in the public testimony. It's possible it's been brought up in the private testimony. These might be the things that they consider classified. I honestly don't know. I haven't seen it. I haven't heard it, just like you, Dean. And I'm also curious. Yes, we know. I mean, we've known since, 2 days after 9/11, that there were all these puts. A put is where basically you're betting a stock is going to go down. And if it goes down, you win. You make money. There were all these puts bought on United Airlines and American Airlines on 9/10. On September 10th, and the puts were paid off. Who placed those puts? Who bought those puts? We don't know yet.
Amazing.
Yeah, it is. Dean, thanks for the call. 1-866-889-8894. Scott in Orlando, Florida, is on the line. Hey, Scott, welcome to the Tom Hartman radio program.
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Great. What's up?
No matter what came out of the hearings today or come out at all, I don't know if you've noticed that Fox News has already set up a propaganda war saying that it's just a bipartisan or a partisan committee, and they're trying to already discredit what's coming out.
Oh, they set that thing up back, 5 years ago. Roger Ailes, okay. Sure. I mean, that's what you expect. I mean, this is, and you know, truth be told, Scott, here I am picking on Condi Rice and the administration. I mean, they're really... although I'm not quite as, I don't think I'm as partisan, I'm not openly a Democrat, as it were, but I certainly think that this administration has done some horrible things to the United States, to our freedoms, to our standing around the world, to our economy, and now they're trying to hide the fact that they were so obsessed with Iraq, and I think, frankly, the main reason that they went into Iraq, the two main reasons were, number one, to get the oil, and number two, because George Bush thought that being a war president would enhance his probability of getting reelected.
Exactly.
And I agree
with all that. The other thing, I'm reading Against All Enemies right now.
Yeah, Dick Clark's book.
It's an excellent book, and if anybody wants to try and discredit what he says, all you've got to realize is that the White House sat on it for 3 months. If any of it was untrue, they could have redacted half the book and not had a book to put out there.
Yeah, the White House vetted that book line by line.
Excellent. But it really is a fantastic read of what went on for the last 12, 15 years.
Yeah, excellent. Excellent point, Scott. Thank you. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Here, a couple more claims and facts. Condoleezza Rice this morning, she made the claim in her initial statement, "We increased funding for counterterrorism activities across several agencies." This in the first 233 days of the administration. Here's the fact. Upon taking office, the Bush administration, the 2002 Bush budget, proposed to slash more than half $1 billion out of funding for counterterrorism at the Justice Department. In preparing the 2003 budget, the New York Times reported that the Bush White House, quote, did not endorse FBI requests for $58 million for 149 new counterterrorism field agents, 200 intelligence analysts, and 54 additional translators, and proposed a $65 million cut for the program that gives state and local counterterrorism grants, end quote. Newsweek noted that the administration, quote, vetoed a request to divert $800 million from missile defense into counterterrorism. Missile defense being their primary priority, of course, along with Iraq, because what was Don Rumsfeld's job before he became the head of the Defense Department? He was a lobbyist for missile defense. 1-866-889-8894. Nick in Grand Rapids is on the line. Hey, Nick, what's up?
Hi, Tom. This is thanks for letting me on the air here.
Sure.
I'd beg to differ on the analysis that Condoleezza Rice was doing a filibuster. Actually, it seemed to me that the Democrats that were questioning her really weren't giving her a chance to answer the question.
Okay, and Nick, I don't want to filibuster you, but I got a break coming. If you want to hold, you can finish that thought after the break, okay?
Sure.
That's the Tom Hartman radio program. 10 minutes before the hour. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order 2 bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get 2 bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive 2 free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value, absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
We the people have the unalienable and natural right to self-determination. We the people have the right to our true citizenship. We the people have the right.
Tom Hartman has a new illustrated book called We the People, A Call to Take Back America.
You mean Tom Hartman has a comic book out?
No, it's an illustrated book that tells the history of America's takeover by multinational corporations and what we as citizens can do to take it back.
Illustrated? You mean it has pictures?
Well, it's illustrated the same way a comic book is. Easy and fun, but it's also about a serious topic, the survival of democracy.
How do I get a copy?
It's in bookstores across America and online. You can also find it at buzzflash.com. There's more information at www.tomhartman.com or by calling 1-800-765-1319.
What was that number again?
1-800-765-1319.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order 2 bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get 2 bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now. 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Bottled water does not necessarily mean better water. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. A typical label on a plastic water bottle uses terms such as pure, glacial, and unpolluted. Brian Howard recently investigated the quality of bottled water for E! Magazine. He says it's a self-regulated industry and labels can be misleading.
Most of the language like pure, natural, glacial, pristine, all those words are unregulated. So people sort of take it for granted. They just think, oh, well, if it's someone went to the trouble of bottling it up, then, it must be more pure.
Howard says consumers drink bottled water because they think it's safer. But he says as much as 40% of bottled water originates from a tap. And he says bottled water is not under the same strict regulations as normal tap water.
One of the reasons people drink bottled water is because they believe it's going to be cleaner than their tap water. So they're really replacing their tap water with bottled water. But the industry doesn't want to admit that. They say that they're providing a convenience of food. So it's not regulated by the Environmental Protection Agency.
In 1999, the National Resources Defense Council conducted a study of 103 different brands of bottled water. A quarter of them were contaminated by bacteria, arsenic, or chemicals at levels that exceeded California state standards. Howard says, unlike municipal water utilities, bottled water companies do not have to supply water quality data to the public. And he says bottlers can destroy their records after 2 years. Howard says consumers have difficulty knowing just how pure their bottled water actually is. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Here in the Truth Arena is the Tom Hartman Radio Program. 10 minutes, 5 minutes before the hour. And we were talking to Nick in Grand Rapids. Nick, you want to cut Condi some slack?
Well, it seemed like there were times in which the Democratic questioners were more interested in making a commentary through their questions rather than actually genuinely waiting for a response from her, especially regarding the August 6th document where at times she actually had to try to talk over her questioner because the questioner wasn't even willing to hear her answer.
Didn't you think that was true of the Republicans as well, though, that they kept
throwing her soft balls? I agree. Both of them did do commentary through their questions, and if they cut that short, she could have more thoroughly answered some of those questions.
Yeah, part of the problem was that each one of these guys had exactly 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And the deal that the Bush administration cut was when that 10 minutes is over, you will never again, for the rest of your life, for the history of the human race, ever be able to ask this administration or anybody in it any question under oath, period.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd agreed to that. So I think that they wanted to get in as much as they could while they could.
There were certain times, especially regarding the August 6th document, where I was really amazed at how She was ready to answer the question, but she was being constantly interrupted.
Yeah, but the question was just, what's the title? And she gave, you know...
Oh, I'm talking about the questioner after that.
I see.
But obviously, by answering the question further than the title, she was getting to the true point of the question.
Yeah, perhaps. Or, you know, I think she was trying to weasel out of it. But, you know, we have a difference of perspective, Nick. I appreciate your comments. Thanks for the call.
Sure.
1-866-889-8894. Gary in North Carolina is on the line. Hey, Gary, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Great show, man.
Thank you.
If they had to tape this thing and send it to America's Funniest Videos, they'd probably win the grand prize.
pieces of it, anyway. Or America's Most Tragic Home Videos.
There you go. My question is kind of a two-part question right here. All these so-called experts keep saying there's nothing could be done to prevent 9/11. It was going to take place no matter what they did and everything. How do they know that?
Well, actually, you know, both of the leaders, Lee Hamilton and what's his name, the Republican guy, the two leaders of the 9/11 Commission, last week on one of the TV shows said, we think it could have been prevented.
Yeah, sure.
We think it could have been prevented if they had simply done what the Clinton administration was planning on doing. Gary, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you.
Okay,
Reggie in Kalamazoo, Tom in Grand Rapids, hang on the line. We'll pick you up on the other side of the news. We'll continue this conversation about Condi Rice and the 9/11 hearings. Today, the end of under oath testimony from the Bush administration. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Had to finish getting the newsletter out before I could do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
News break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Michael Stinson in Hawaii.
George W. Bush is facing increasing dissent among leading conservative politicians and pundits in the face of mounting U.S. casualties in Iraq. The war has become the long slog that some Republicans feared. Since Sunday, 35 Americans have been killed in fighting across Iraq. American body bags are on the front page of major U.S. newspapers. A Pew Research Center national survey conducted this week shows that the majority of Americans now disapprove of Bush's handling of the war in Iraq, adding to the GOP dilemma on election day. There is more at stake for Republicans than the White House alone. Militiamen loyal to an anti-U.S. Shiite cleric controlled large swaths of three Iraqi cities Thursday after clashes with coalition forces, while U.S. Marines fought for the second day around a mosque in the Sunni Muslim stronghold of Fajula. Fighting this week has left 35 Americans and at least 459 Iraqis dead. The intensified violence has forced the U.S. military to consider sending more troops to Iraq and to postpone the removal of forces due to rotate out. You can be certain that if they want more troops, we will sign deployment orders so they will have the troops they need, Defense Secretary Donald H. Rumsfeld said at a Pentagon news conference Wednesday, though he insisted fighting was not spinning out of control. Al-Sadir, said to be holed up in his office in Najaf surrounded by gunmen, issued a statement saying Iraq would become another Vietnam for the United States. Firebrand Shiite cleric Muqtada Sadir's militia said it was holding Spanish hostages and possibly an American whom they planned to swap for one of their own Najif-based leaders, Mustafa Yakubi, arrested by coalition forces Saturday. We hold coalition hostages, most of them Spaniards, and possibly a U.S. soldier whom we want to swap against Mustafa al-Yakubi, said Amar al-Husseini, a spokesman for Sadr and Baghdad Shiite bastion of Sadr City. The U.S.-led coalition was not immediately available for comment. Yakubi, like Sadr, is implicated in the murder of a rival pro-American cleric last year.
More after this.
Hello, I'm Rita Moreno. You may have a serious eye condition and not even know it. Vision loss is not a normal part of aging. Some vision changes are normal. Some are due to eye disease. Do you know the difference? Open your eyes to the facts. To get more information about vision and aging, or to find out about what help is available if you're having vision problems, call Lighthouse International at 1-800-829-0500 or visit www.lighthouse.org.
A British man who has sold all his possessions, including his clothes, will stand in a rented tuxedo on Sunday and bet everything on a single spin of the roulette wheel. If he wins, he doubles his money. If he loses, he will be left only with a television crew documenting his every move. Ashley Revelle, a 32-year-old Londoner, said he was worth about £75,000 after he sold everything in March. Revelle said he'd planned to have a friend videotape his bet it all spin, but Sky One Television decided it was worth a short reality series called Double or Nothing. For a Minuteman News Service, this is Michael Stinson in Hawaii.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Despite George W.'s recent cheerleading effort to convince us that sizz boom bah, the economy is surging and the boom is back, most Americans are shaking their heads and saying, a boom for whom? With the mass of offshoring of both blue-collar and white-collar jobs, and with the Walmartization of wages and benefits here at home, it's no longer just the unskilled, down-and-out, abject poor who are left out by our boom-boom economy, but also skilled, formerly middle-class workers. There's a quiet crisis spreading in the America that Washington and Wall Street either never visit or ignore. I'm not talking about the inner cities, but the middle-class suburbs, where even hunger is a growing problem. Food insecurity, as the jargonists label it, is up by 15% in the last 4 years. That's 1.5 million new people now struggling to put food on their tables. One soup kitchen serving 11 Connecticut suburbs says 80% of its clients have jobs, mostly low-wage, no-benefit, Walmartized jobs. Likewise, affordable housing needs have long been ignored by both government and commercial developers, so 94 million of our people now have significant housing problems. That's one-third of the population of the richest country on earth. Worse, 40 million of us now have housing problems ranked as severe, meaning their housing is either severely substandard, severely unaffordable, or both. Housing prices go up, while most people's incomes stay flat or go down, and the affordable housing crisis mushrooms. Meanwhile, the richest among us get the bulk of federal housing subsidies. Not only do multimillionaires enjoy full mortgage deductibility on their main mansions, but also on their Park Avenue condo, their Aspen getaway home, and the summer place at the beach. This is Jim Hightower saying, if the elites continue to ignore the hard realities faced by a growing majority of us, they'll need to build mighty high fences around their own compounds.
It's night. You have heartburn. You want fast relief. Zantac works fast. When first used, Prilosec OTC works not so fast. Zantac works right when you need it.
Hello, relief.
Prilosec's label says it may take 1 to 4 days to fully work. So, what would you choose?
Estimated time of relief, 1 to 4 days.
Prilosec? Nah. Zantac's for people who hate to wait, especially at night. Use as directed.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too. But who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl.
rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. 7 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you here. The place where smart people get their news. Reggie in Kalamazoo has been patiently waiting. Hey, Reggie. I assume
hey, how you doing, Tom? Fantastic show.
Thank you. I assume you want to comment on Condi's marvelous performance this morning.
Yeah, there's two things that I got out of her testimony, which I don't really believe was a testimony. Number one, you know, when you read between the lines, she really wanted to say, you know, why didn't the Clinton administration do anything about it? And two, it's quite obvious that, you know, they dropped the ball.
Yeah.
And that's just the bottom line. The minute that she got the word in I forget which report it was, that Al-Qaeda insurgents were in the U.S., now that should have been 80 red flags right there.
Yeah.
You know, because I mean, the tracer had already been bombed in 93. And, you know, Homeland Security should have been on the table a long time ago.
Well, this was, you know, and the Clinton administration had been aggressively pursuing this right up to the point of throwing 60 cruise missiles into Afghanistan. The Republicans went screaming, stark raving nuts, saying that that Clinton was trying to deflect attention from Monica Lewinsky. The coal bombing happened in October of 2000. By January, they had figured out that it was Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda behind it. And about 3 weeks before the Bush administration took over, and they thought, you know, okay, we got 3 weeks. These guys can pick up the ball from here. We're not going to start a war and hand it off to the next administration. That just, you know, it wouldn't be good manners, much less good policy. It probably wouldn't be good policy. And so they handed this thing off to the Bush administration. They said, okay, al-Qaeda was responsible for bombing the USS Cole. Do something about it. And by the way, here's a plan that Dick Clark put together to do something about it. And they asked Condi Rice about this today. Why didn't you do anything about the USS Cole? And she didn't answer. I mean,
well,
she just waffled.
The thing is that, you know, they don't want to be accountable for nothing.
Well, it's the new bumper sticker, the new official bumper sticker of the Bush administration. The buck stops over there.
Yeah, and you know, it's like psych warfare on the American people. You know, it's just like, you know, shuffle it around and, you know, they'll, you know, you know, the problem never gets solved.
Yeah. To give them some due, we have to acknowledge that this is not the first administration to do this. This is something that's been going on for a long, long time in Washington, D.C. On the other hand, this is a really serious issue. This, I mean, you know, the defense, the possibility of the United States of America being under attack again. And here we, you know, Bush is still refusing. He's got $160 billion to spend in Iraq, but he won't spend $6 billion to defend our ports.
Yeah,
and you have to say why.
Lastly, Tom, I didn't mean to interrupt. You know, my thing is that, you know, it's clear that they had a whole different agenda planned out.
Oh, yeah, and it had to do with Iraq. I mean, you know, right from day one. It's not just Richard Clark saying this. I mean, you know, their former Commerce Secretary Paul O'Neill is saying, you know, the very first meeting that we had as a cabinet was about how to overthrow Iraq. Say what? it's just amazing. Reggie, thanks a lot for the call.
Hey,
I appreciate it.
Tom.
Good to hear from Kalamazoo, Michigan. 1-866-889-8894. A senior terrorism expert said yesterday, this from The Guardian, and the senior terrorism expert they're quoting, by the way, is Gary Hart. Remember the Hart-Rudman Commission? Gary Hart and Warren Rudman. Warren Rudman was a former United States senator from New Hampshire, the Republican. Gary Hart, the former Democratic senator from Colorado. And they chaired a commission on threats against the United States back during the Clinton administration, and they came up with this set of very specific recommendations and laid it out. I mean, this just laid this thing out. The commission was established by Bill Clinton in October of 1998, and the report came out in early 2001 and was handed to the Bush administration. And here, just this, a senior terrorism expert, this from an article by Julian Borger in the Guardian, the British newspaper. Senior terrorism expert said yesterday that he had delivered a final desperate warning of an inevitable terrorist attack to Condoleezza Rice 5 days before Al-Qaeda struck New York's World Trade Center and the Pentagon in Washington. On the eve of the National Security Advisor's public appearance today to defend the Bush administration's record before the commission studying the 9/11 attacks, Gary Hart, a former Democratic presidential candidate who co-chaired an earlier three-year public study of the threats to U.S. security in the 21st century, told The Guardian his warning had been ignored. Gary Hart goes to Condoleezza Rice and says, okay, Condi, back in 98, Bill Clinton established this commission. Me and Warren Rudman and I, we have looked at all this stuff. We have figured out what the threats are to the United States. We got some real serious problems here. We're going to be attacked by Al-Qaeda. And what does Condi Rice say to him? Here's his quote. She, Rice, said, I'll discuss it with the vice president, Mr. Hart said. But he felt the response was a brush off. He further says, all I can say is that she didn't feel the degree of urgency I thought was necessary. And he says he's known her for 20 years since she'd volunteered to work on his Colorado Senate campaign. That's interesting. She's been a political junkie for a long, long time. Their report, which they handed to the Bush administration in early 2001, said, quote, America will become increasingly vulnerable to hostile attack on our homeland, and Americans will likely die on American soil, possibly in large numbers. According to Mr. Hart, the recommendations were ignored. 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to be on the program. Mike in Tampa, Florida is on the line. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Good afternoon, Tom. I've been listening to your show here. I'm enjoying it. Listen, my take on this whole thing, you know, I just want to find out what we did wrong and to fix it. And it appears to me like there's plenty of blame to go around on both administrations, and that, you know, President Clinton, I think he took it very seriously as an urgent threat, but I think politically he let some political things that were going on hold him back from doing what needed to be done. For instance, the wag the dog thing. He couldn't have got his actions passed through Congress. And if he just sent troops in, no base of operations over there. There are a number of things that, you know, I think Clinton could have done better. But I think a lot of people in the administration have come forward and kind of acknowledged, yeah, we could have, you know, in hindsight, we might could have done better.
Right.
But what I hear the Bush administration saying through Condi Rice is, even in hindsight, we can't think of anything we could have possibly done better.
Yeah, and
that
which
boggles my mind to say, okay, look, we're not blaming you here, but what could you have done better? And they're not willing to say they could have done anything better. And
well,
it's just mind-boggling.
Yeah, you know, Mike, I think that there's two reasons for that. One is that George Bush never in his life has said, I was wrong or I'm sorry. I mean, I don't want to characterize him as a spoiled rich kid, as so many people do. I think that that's a too easy a description. But there's something about him that makes it impossible for him to acknowledge responsibility and culpability for things. This is a thread that we have seen run throughout this administration. If somebody says the truth that they don't like, they try to destroy the person. And so
they've
there's
done that throughout.
Yeah, and so there's that issue, and there's also the fact that that this administration, right from the beginning, was obsessed with Iraq. And I think that that's probably the thing that they're trying to hide the most, or that they don't want people to realize the most. They really want people to think, and they actually have succeeded in fooling about half of America, them and Fox News, into thinking that somehow 9/11 was the fault of Saddam Hussein, and therefore attacking Iraq was part of a, quote, war on terror, end quote. When in fact the documents increasingly are demonstrating in the testimony of people from the inside this administration, not from, you know, Democrats on the outside or Ralph Nader or something, but people within the administration, people like Paul O'Neill and Richard Clark. Paul O'Neill, a good friend of the president, a political appointee, the Secretary of Commerce, saying these guys wanted to go after Iraq as job one from the moment they came into office. We still don't know why.
Well, that was coming out before even Mr. O'Neill put his book out. That was from the beginning. You were hearing leaks from the White House and the CIA that said they wanted to, you know, pin this on Iraq.
Yeah.
So I don't think that's a surprise to most people. Now, one other thing I want to point out is that there have been some very, there have been two people in this hearing that I've really trusted what they said, and those were Richard Clark and Mr. Armitage. I don't know if you saw him speak.
I did, yeah.
But he came across as very credible to me. I mean, he just laid the facts out like they were, and I think, you know, for instance, when he said there was no military plan there, I mean, that was straight and to the point.
Yeah.
And he wasn't trying to burn anybody. I think he was in it to try to let's fix what's wrong here.
Well,
I have a lot more respect for this administration if they simply said, look, we honestly believe that Iraq was the biggest problem because we thought that the terrorists had to have a state sponsor.
Yeah.
And they couldn't exist without one, and we thought going after Iraq was the best deal. But, you know, in hindsight, we were wrong. I could accept that. I could understand that. I could see the rationale even.
Yeah.
But I can't accept this crap about, no, we did every, we took it as the highest threat and we still got hit. That tells me, well, they did the best they could possibly do and we still can't stop them. So it's just, these people, they're just, and I voted for Bush, I'm sorry to say. I won't vote for him again. So it's just, it just blows my mind to see what they're doing. They're really making me, really ashamed that I voted for the guy.
Well, you know, here's the thing, Mike, that I think, you know, for me is the biggest issue, is I have no problem with a national debate about whether we should invade Iraq. You know, if the Bush administration thinks that the fact that Saddam Hussein tried to kill George Bush's father was a legitimate reason to invade Iraq, or if they think that, as Dick Cheney said, they're sitting on 10% of the world's oil reserves, this is very significant, that you know, that we need the oil, that we should invade Iraq, that Saddam sending $25,000 to Hezbollah, you know, whenever some suicide bombers in Israel, that's enough provocation to invade Iraq, that we need to establish a democracy in the Middle East, we might as well start with Iraq, any of those things, if they had laid out any of those things and said, this is something that they wouldn't say out loud, but, you know, when George Bush Sr. in 1999, fought the Gulf War, his approval ratings went right through the roof, and if he had just extended that thing another 3 months, he would have easily beaten Bill Clinton for the presidency because his approval ratings would have stayed so high people would have ignored the economy because people like a war president. And increasingly, I'm thinking that was probably about 70% of the decision here. But in any case, if they had said, let's have a discussion of these issues, and there was a national debate.
I mean, I'd hate to think that he went to war just for politics, but, you know, as much as I hate to think it, it's sure starting to look that way.
Yeah, and then we've got, you know, Richard Pearl, Wolfowitz in Vanity Fair last year saying, well, you know, we had a bunch of good reasons to go after Iraq, and I think I just listed some of them.
Oh, yeah.
And he said, but, you know, we couldn't sell that to the American public, so we had to go with this bureaucratic reason of weapons of mass destruction. I'm sorry, lying to the American people just doesn't cut it.
You know, they're trying to put a happy face on this and say 10% of the people are causing all the problems. But, you know, from reports I've heard from Iraq and read and phone,
it's
phone
a mess.
News,
it's an absolute mess, Mike. Yeah, it is. Mike, thanks for the call. I appreciate
it.
Okay. Tom Harbin, stay tuned.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do they know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
You know that grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't. but that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that is exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. And they are earth-friendly. My name is Véronique. I founded the Organic Wine Company in 1980 for people just like you. People who love wine and want to do well by our earth. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. We'll answer all your questions. I look forward to talking with you. Call 1-888-ECO-WINE, and that is ECOWINE.
In my country, a group of religious extremists are reshaping the government to promote their own agenda and morality.
The government can keep a list of everyone I call, and they do not need a judge's permission.
Our citizens are seized and held in prison without being charged of a crime, without the right to a trial, and without a lawyer. Why should you care about what is happening to my country? Because my country is the United States of America.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Credit card delinquency hit an all-time high at the end of 2003, according to the American Bankers Association. Nearly 4.5% of all U.S. credit card bills are a month or more past due. The ABA blames the situation squarely on the jobless recovery. Many Americans use their credit cards as stopgaps during times when money is tight. Couple that with a scarce job market and a rising rate of long-term unemployment, and conditions are ripe for rising delinquency.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Sure about that?
Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, hi. How you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Tom Hartman radio program, helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number if you'd like to be on the program today. Eric in Sioux Falls, North Dakota is on the line. Hey, Eric, what's up?
Good day, Tom. My hat goes off to you and your wife for the show that you produce.
Thank you.
I want to just spiel something to you, and then I'll hang up and you can comment on it. I talked to you before about a conspiracy, and I noticed that a lot of you, yourself as well, and your listeners are always asking questions about things, and I'm just kind of wondering if you might want to give it some consideration that they're all threaded together by conspiracy. For example, 9/11, it was planned to happen so that George Bush couldn't go into Iraq, so that the insurance rates could go up, so Homeland Security could infringe on the people's freedoms and rights here. And so I just wanted to run that quickly by you. I believe that it all ties this together. And just, you know, I'm not saying to believe it totally, but maybe just give it a thought that there is a conspiracy going on.
Yeah.
Thanks very much for your time, and I'll listen to what you have to say.
Sure, Eric. Okay, thank you. You know, if you're welcome to stay in the line, too, if you want. The last time... Well, actually, it's a noisy line here, so I'll answer you offline. The last time that something like this happened that was a real presented to the American people as a biggie was back in 1798, 2 years before 1800. John Adams was president of the United States. And we were not having a good time in our relationship with France at the time. Napoleon had after the French Revolution and then the Terror and Napoleon had taken over, and John Adams sent a delegation of three guys, two of them very good friends of his, and one of them a good friend of Thomas Jefferson's. And I learned about this by reading Jefferson's correspondence with this guy on this issue. And of course, these aren't secrets or anything. You'll find this in history books as well. And these guys went over there and they got dissed by the French. I mean, they were not welcomed appropriately at the court in Versailles and all this sort of thing. And they were very upset. But then one evening while they were there, these three Frenchmen showed up at midnight in their room and said, if you will give us some money, and I forget how much money it was, but it was, in today's terms, a substantial portion, a couple $100,000, let's say, whatever that was back then. You'll give us some money, we can fix the deal with the French government so that America can, accomplish what it's trying to accomplish, and we can repair the relationship and all this kind of thing. And Jefferson's opinion and the opinion of his friend in this group and the opinion of most Americans was that these guys were just hustlers, that they didn't actually represent the French government. But John Adams turned this thing into a huge deal. He wrote a series of 50 newspaper articles. He referred to it as the X, Y, and Z affair because they never knew the names of these three French guys. So they were called Mr. X, Monsieur X, Monsieur Y, and Monsieur Z, the X, Y, Z affair. And this was used in part as justification for passing the Alien and Sedition Acts, which was the first iteration of the Patriot Act. It was passed in 1898. And as soon as that law was passed, the Alien and Sedition Act was passed, boom, 20 newspaper editors who opposed John Adams found themselves in jail, and Matthew Lyon, the congressman from Vermont, was arrested and thrown into jail for speaking out on the House of the Floor of Representatives against John Adams, for calling him pompous. I mean, that's what he went to prison for. And so there's a long history in the United States going back to the very early days of people using opportunities, taking events and saying, we can use this. So I frankly don't think that they needed 9/11. I think they would have eventually found something that they could have used to dust off the Patriot Act, which was, had been written actually about 3 years earlier. It was a rewrite of an attempt that was passed, or an attempt to pass legislation that happened right after Tim McVeigh blew up the federal building. I think that they would have found something. I don't think that they necessarily needed 9/11. This is just a repeat of ancient history. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. 29 minutes past the hour. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
On December 10th, the Bush administration joined 45 states, warning Americans not to eat fish with high mercury levels that can cause birth defects and learning disabilities. But days later, the administration said it wanted to give power plants permission to shower more mercury onto our lakes and streams for 10 years longer than the law allows. Sound fishy? Mr. President, there's a better way to strengthen the State of the Union. Protect us, not the polluters who contributed to your campaign. Enforce the Clean Air Act.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. An unreported bomb threat leaves three unions representing Northwest Airlines employees steamed. One plane was searched in Detroit, another was searched in Los Angeles, and a third in both Memphis, Tennessee, and Miami. Grievances were filed by the Professional Flight Attendants Association, the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, and the Aircraft Mechanics Fraternal Association. The unions want specific protocol for immediately informing airline employees of any threat.
Tyson Foods faces new unfair labor practice charges from two meatpacking plants. Workers at Tyson's Wallula, Washington facility vote on whether to decertify their union today. And leading up to the vote, Teamsters Local 556 claims Tyson offered people promotions and bonuses for voting no on the union and peppered the plant with stickers urging the same. Tyson's contract with the Teamsters in Washington State expires at the end of May. At the Tyson plant in Jefferson, Wisconsin, United Food and Commercial Workers Local 538 is asking the National Labor Relations Board to force
forced Tyson to rehire workers that went on strike for nearly a year against a contract offer that cut their wages and benefits. As part of its settlement in January, Tyson promised to take back the strikers but reserved the right to put them in entry-level jobs. Two-thirds of them still await the call back to work. A petition to decertify the UFCW local at the Jefferson Packing House is already pending at the NLRB, filed by the replacement workers brought in during the strike. A ruling on that effort is expected before the end of the month.
More than 1,000 Rhode Island home care workers have the green light to join a labor union thanks to a ruling Tuesday by the State Labor Relations Board. Home child care providers are mostly women who care for up to 6 children in their homes or up to 8 with an assistant. These workers will now have 60 days to vote on whether or not to join the AFL-CIO Family Child Care Providers Union, gaining state benefits and a unified voice regarding working conditions.
Walmart's referendum to circumvent the city of Inglewood, California, and build a small retail village exempt from city oversight failed Tuesday. The company took its development to the ballot box after the Inglewood City Council overwhelmingly rejected it. Voter turnout was 29%. 60% said no.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Beyond plunging the federal budget into a record deficit, the Bush tax cuts shifted the tax burden significantly. According to United for a Fair Economy, corporate taxes have dropped 67% compared to a 17% increase in individual taxes. Meanwhile, states are shouldering more of the tax burden. Collectively, they've seen a 15% increase in their share of taxes.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, Defending America from the Conservative Weapons of Mass Deception. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 26 minutes before the hour. Back with you. Condi Rice testifying today. Yeah, the spin just never ends. The USA Today, of all groups, an article by Mimi Hall in USA Today, outed the latest spin attempt. Scotty McClellan, good old Scotty, went before the reporters, and he said, you know, I don't know what the big deal is here with, I'm paraphrasing, with Condi Rice testifying before the 9/11 Commission, you know, why they want to hear her so badly. Back in the, last month when she testified, not under oath, of course, so she could say anything she wanted and not be held accountable for it, but back last month when she testified, he said, and I quote, only 5 members showed up, end quote. And Scotty made a big deal about this to the press corps, like, you know, hey, you know, this is getting politicized. Isn't it obvious? And I'm sure you'll hear this on Faux News. Isn't it obvious this is just all political? Only 5 of these guys even showed up the last time Rice testified. Now, all of a sudden, they all want to talk to her? What McClellan didn't tell reporters, according to USA Today's Mimi Hall, was that on November 21st, long before Rice met with the 5 commissioners in February, the White House counsel's office had sent the commission a letter saying no more than 3 commissioners could attend meetings with White House aides of Rice's rank. Commissioner Jamie Gorelick, who did not attend the interview with Rice on February 7th, said she finds it infuriating that the White House would insinuate commissioners shirked their duty and didn't have the right to press for more time with Rice. That's hooey, she said. Oh, she's being charitable. As the spokesman for the commission, Al Felsenberg, said on Tuesday. He said, "We're a little surprised that the White House has repeatedly implied to the commission, to the public, that commissioners were uninterested in attending these meetings." You get this? The White House says, "You can only have three guys, you can only have three people show up for somebody at the level of Condi Rice. Only three people can show." By the way, our number 1-866-889-8894, if you'd like to be on the air. You can only have three people show up. Five of them actually showed up. Only five members actually showed up, despite the fact that it, you know, this is Scotty. Okay, Scotty. Only five members actually showed up, despite the fact that it was scheduled for the entire commission. He says, "You had another national security official under Dr. Rice who met with the commission. I think only four showed up." He says, "I think you need to keep that in context for your reporting." Yeah. And here we have it. What McClellan didn't tell reporters was that on November 21st, the White House counsel's office sent the commission a letter saying no more than three commissioners could attend meetings with White House aides of Rice's rank. Rank is taking on a new meaning here. 23 minutes before the hour. We were going through the list of what, you know, the facts and the, you know, what actually happened and what was said. Let me just, I just want to get back to this list because this is great. While we were, this is Condoleezza Rice's testimony this morning. She said, "While we were developing this new strategy to deal with Al-Qaeda," now that's a particularly important or interesting comment, that they were developing a new strategy, unless the new strategy was invade Iraq, which apparently it was. It was actually an old strategy because, as Dick Clark has said repeatedly, please declassify my January 21st memo and declassify the September 4th policy that was developed and signed off on by the president, because they're the same thing. Anyhow, Condi Rice, and she never contradicted Clark, by the way. I don't know if you noticed, but nowhere in her testimony this morning did she say anything that directly contradicted Richard Clark. She, you know, kind of waffled around questions, weaseled around questions, avoided questions, filibustered, to use Bob Kerry's phrase. You know, he asked her a question. She went into one of these long things where she was repeating stuff she'd already said twice. And he said, "Please don't filibuster me." And she said, "I'm just trying to answer your question." And then she continued to filibuster him. And you could see the look on his face was, "Oh, my God." And he kept saying, "I've only got 10 minutes to ask you these questions. I got a bunch of questions." She was not going to let him ask those questions. She did a great job for Condi Rice, for this president. She really did a great job for George Bush. She succeeded in keeping the three commission members who had the intention of asking hard questions, who only had 10 minutes each, she succeeded in keeping them from asking the majority of the questions that they wanted to ask. I am sure that they are throwing a party for her at the White House this afternoon. In exchange for that, in exchange for this testimony, the White House got this marvelous deal where George Bush does not have to testify unless Dick Cheney is sitting right next to him, and the two of them don't have to testify under oath. And nobody else from this administration can ever be called to testify under oath. And the commission agreed to that in writing in exchange for what they got this morning. Anyhow, here's Condi's claim from this morning. This is from her statement that she read before she started being questioned. She said, "While we were developing this new strategy to deal with Al-Qaeda, we also made decisions on a number of specific anti-Al-Qaeda initiatives that had been proposed by Dick Clark." Now, as the Center for American Progress points out, David Sirota and company, Rice's statement finally confirms what she previously denied. She falsely claimed on March 22nd that, quote, "no Al-Qaeda plan was turned over to the new administration," end quote. So here she is contradicting herself. Of course, the commissioners were polite enough not to point that out. It'll be interesting to see if the news media points it out. Another marvelous claim from Condi Rice. When threat reporting increased during the spring and summer of 2001, we moved the U.S. government at all levels to a high state of alert and activity. The fact? Documents indicate that before 9/11, the Bush administration did not give terrorism top billing in their strategic plans for the Justice Department, which includes the FBI. General Henry H. Shelton, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff until October 1st of 2001, said this summer, terrorism had been moved further to the back burner under the Bush administration, and recounts how the Bush administration's two top Pentagon appointees, Don Rumsfeld and Paul Wolfowitz, shut down a plan to weaken the Taliban. Now, you wonder if this has to do with the $40 million that they gave the Taliban in the first months of the Bush administration. Aid to the Taliban. Anyhow, similarly, General Don Kerik, who served in the Bush White House, sent a memo to the new administration saying, quote, we are going to be struck again by Al-Qaeda, end quote. Never heard back. When he was asked about this, this is United States General, served in the Bush White House, Don Kerik. He said to the administration, as right after they got brought into office, he was referring to the USS Cole, and he said, we are going to be struck again by Al-Qaeda. He never heard back. In fact, what he said, what he told the Washington Post was, terrorism was not above the waterline. They were gambling nothing would happen. They gambled. We lost. Iraq was on the list, but not this stuff. Claim, the threat reporting that we received in the spring of 2001 was not specific as to the manner of attack. This, Condi Rice said this morning. It was not specific. Here's the fact. ABC News reported Bush administration officials, quote, acknowledged that U.S. intelligence officials informed President Bush weeks before the September 11 attacks that bin Laden's terrorism network might try to hijack American planes. Weeks before the attack, that would have been the threat assessment. And what was the title of that threat assessment? Let's hear Condi Rice again on this. This is the cut. This is the opening of the can of worms that this administration did not want opened.
Isn't it a fact, Dr. Rice, that the August 6 PDB,
Presidential Daily Briefing,
warned against possible attacks in this country? And I ask you whether you recall the title of that PDB.
I believe the title was Bin Laden Determined to Attack Inside the United States. Now the PDB. No, Mr. I would like to finish my point here.
I didn't know there
given
was
that
a point.
You asked me whether or not it warned of attacks.
I asked you what the title was.
Yeah, but then she keeps on going and she keeps on going and she keeps on going because she knows the next question is going to be, why didn't he do anything? Well, yeah, of course he did do something. He told John Ashcroft, and John Ashcroft stopped flying on commercial airplanes. He did do something. He took the longest vacation in the history of the American presidency. And then he wouldn't go back to Washington, D.C. He went to Florida, and there he is standing in the hall outside a classroom. And Andy Card comes to him and says, one of the Twin Towers has been hit by an airplane. Now, Bush, in both a news conference and a speech, has said on the record that he watched the first tower being hit by an airplane before he went into the classroom. And in fact, he made the joke in the speech. He said, you know, I'm a pilot myself, and I was thinking that's one pretty bad pilot. And his claim is that he thought, well, this was a tragic aviation accident. But at that point, I mean, here he is, the President of the United States. The World Trade Center's just been hit. What's he going to do? He goes in and sits down with a classroom full of kids and holds a book upside down. You've seen the picture. Finally gets it right. And then Andy Card comes in and says, the second tower has been hit. And we are under attack, Mr. President. And he continues for 7 more minutes. Watch the tape. 7 more minutes, he continues to carry on a conversation with the kids about the little goat. Anyhow, the ABC News reporter, Condi Rice, this morning, says, we were not given... Well, here, let's get the exact quote. The threat reporting that we received in the spring and summer of 2001 was not specific as to manner of attack. ABC News reported, on the other hand, the Bush administration officials acknowledged that U.S. intelligence officials informed President Bush weeks before the 9/11 attacks that Bin Laden's terrorist network might try to hijack American planes. Dateline NBC reported that on August 6, 2001, the president personally received a 1.5-page briefing advising him that Osama bin Laden was capable of a major strike against the U.S. and that that plot could include the hijacking of an American plane. And what was the title of that piece of paper that the president received on August 6th, a month before 9/11, Ms. Rice?
I believe the title was Bin Laden Determined to Attack Inside the United States.
Inside the United States. Rice herself actually admitted this, saying the August 6th briefing the president received said, quote, terrorists might attempt to hijack a U.S. aircraft. So here we have Rice contradicting Rice. Ah, what tangled webs we weave. I mean, it's really quite remarkable. The question now becomes, what did the president know, and when did he know it? Or what didn't the president know, and why didn't he know it? Rice has said that addressing al-Qaeda was a top priority. On April 8th, she said, it was the very first major national security policy directive of the Bush administration. Not Russia, not missile defense, not Iraq. But the truth is that Russia and Iraq took priority for the Bush White House and for Rice. Rice talked about Russia 3 times on national TV before 9/11, but never discussed al-Qaeda. She was on CNN's Late Night on February 4th, 2001, a month after they took office. Her first major TV appearance as National Security Advisor. And she was asked, what are the biggest threats that are facing America? And she said, and I quote, and so we look forward to conversations and discussions at all levels with the Russian government about how we move forward to a new restructured relationship that is more evident and more capable of dealing with the threats that we face today rather than the threats that we faced 25, 30 years ago. On Face the Nation, on July 29th, 2001, now 2 months before 9/11, she talked exclusively about Russia and missile defense, never once mentioned al-Qaeda. She was even scheduled to give a speech on 9/11, you know, that didn't mention terrorism. What a mess we have in the United States. We can fix this come November. We can fix it. 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman with you.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order 2 bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get 2 bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive 2 free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value, absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The founding fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed, or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now, 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Biologists in Colorado have helped a native fish survive serious pollution in its gene pool. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. The greenback cutthroat trout once filled rivers in Colorado on the eastern slope of the Continental Divide. But people started putting sport fish like rainbow trout in those rivers, and the newcomers were hard on the old-timers. The cutthroats were crowded out of their natural habitat. They also started to crossbreed with their new neighbors, and they lost some of their genetic identity in the process. That's turning around thanks to some dedicated biologists and Rocky Mountain waterfalls. Andrew Martin is a biologist at the University of Colorado at Boulder, and he studies the genetic traits of the cutthroat trout. He says the first step to restoring it required finding cutthroats that were untainted by crossbreeding. The purebreds were taken to hatcheries, and their offspring were reintroduced in the streams high in the Rocky Mountains. Martin says the offspring are in waters that are free of foreign fish and isolated by waterfalls.
The trout are only in the highest elevation streams that are separated from downstream places by big waterfalls, so fish can't get above these waterfalls. It's the only way we can keep them native, because if there's so many introduced species now that they can't persist down lower where all the introduced species are.
The greenback cutthroat trout is actually native to a large area at lower elevations, but most of that watershed is now dominated by non-native fish. Martin says this project is working simply because a group of people took action to save a unique creature.
If we know that the conditions are deteriorating so much in this one place that the species could potentially blink off the planet, people start to care.
In this case, the people who care include members of Trout Unlimited and people in the Colorado Division of Wildlife and two federal agencies. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
All those insecurities that have held me down for so long, can't say I found a cure for these, but at least I know they're
And welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman radio program in our chat room. Tricia, you can get to the chat room, by the way, tomhartman.com. Click on the chat button. It takes you to the Democratic Forum and CompuServe, where we hold a live chat while we're on the air every day. And Tricia says, Rice's statement this morning, we couldn't ask the president for his opinion on the memo because he was on his wooden pony at the time out in the Texas compound on vacation. And so Dick and I taking things in our own hands. I found the perfect bumper sticker, she says. Yes, very, very, well, wooden pony, yes. He wouldn't have been on a real one because he's afraid of horses, but... Anyhow, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Ron in Tucson, Arizona is on the line. Hey, Ron, what's up?
How you doing, Tom?
Great.
Tom, my greater concern is this. I listen to you and Ed Schultz on Sirius, and my feeling is we're missing the people that we need to convert because we're not on TV, and outside of Sean Combs, it is totally useless. He doesn't do the thing next to Sean Hannity, kills him, Alan Combs, rather. And, I think unless we get these messages and these stories out on TV, it's going to go nowhere.
Yeah.
I think you're preaching to the choir, so to speak, and I think that's great. It's good for us to know these things and to be informed of these things, but I think without the TV reinforcing it, we're going to get killed. And we need people like Ted Turner and Soros and all these money guys to come up and somehow or another get us on national exposure where, other people of other persuasions will hear.
Good point, Ron. Ron, I absolutely agree with you, and I need to move along here. In fact, I think the TV... what I want to see is the mainstream media starting to ask these questions. And we are not just preaching the converted here. First of all, I get a lot of hate emails, so I know that the right wing are listening to me. And secondly, we had a caller just a couple of callers ago. I voted for Bush, but, so it is changing. Skip in Las Vegas is on the line. Hey, Skip, what's up?
Hey, what's up, Tom? Just something real quick. I think people have the wrong idea, like we can defeat terrorism and we can win a war that, is really unwinnable.
Yeah.
I mean, people in the United States have this thing of a beginning and an ending. It's never going to end. It's something that's going to go on for the rest of our existence.
Well,
people are always going to hate us, and people are always going to try to find ways to destroy us.
Yeah, and it's not terrorism that we're at war with. It's a particularly virulent, small branch of radical Islam, and we are doing everything we can right now, apparently, to feed them, to incite them, to stir them up, and it's not working. The strategy is very destructive. Skip, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Talk radio for the rest of us.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. I have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
News break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Michael Stinson in Hawaii.
George W. Bush is facing increasing dissent among leading conservative politicians and pundits in the face of mounting U.S. casualties in Iraq. The war has become the long slog that some Republicans feared. Since Sunday, 35 Americans have been killed in fighting across Iraq. American body bags are on the front page of major U.S. newspapers. A Pew Research Center national survey conducted this week shows that the majority of Americans now disapprove of Bush's handling of the war in Iraq. Adding to the GOP dilemma, on Election Day, there is more at stake for Republicans than the White House alone. Militiamen loyal to an anti-U.S. Shiite cleric controlled large swaths of three Iraqi cities Thursday after clashes with coalition forces, while U.S. Marines fought for the second day around a mosque in the Sunni Muslim stronghold of Fajullah. Fighting this week has left 35 Americans and at least 459 Iraqis dead. The intensified violence has forced the U.S. military to consider sending more troops to Iraq and to postpone the removal of forces due to rotate out. You can be certain that if they want more troops, we will sign deployment orders so they will have the troops they need, Defense Secretary Donald H. Rumsfeld said at a Pentagon news conference Wednesday, though he insisted fighting was not spinning out of control. Al-Sadr said to be holed up in his office in Najaf, surrounded by gunmen, issued a statement saying Iraq would become another Vietnam for the United States. Firebrand Shiite cleric Muqtada Sadir's militia said it was holding Spanish hostages and possibly an American whom they planned to swap for one of their own Najaf-based leaders, Mustafa Yaqubi, arrested by coalition forces Saturday. "We hold coalition hostages, most of them Spaniards, and possibly a U.S. soldier whom we want to swap against Mustafa al-Yaqubi," said Amar al-Husseini, a spokesman for Sadr and Baghdad Shiite bastion of Sadr City. The U.S.-led coalition was not immediately available for comment. Yaqubi, like Sadr, is implicated in the murder of a rival pro-American cleric last year. More after this.
Hello, I'm Rita Moreno. You may have a serious eye condition and not even know it. Vision loss is not a normal part of aging. Some vision changes are normal. Some are due to eye disease. Do you know the difference? Open your eyes to the facts. To get more information about vision and aging or to find out about what help is available if you're having vision problems, call Lighthouse International at 1-800-829-0500 or visit www.lighthouse.org.
A British man who has sold all his possessions, including his clothes, will stand in a rented tuxedo on Sunday and bet everything on a single spin of the roulette wheel. If he wins, he doubles his money. If he loses, he will be left only with a television crew documenting his every move. Ashley Revelle, a 32-year-old Londoner, said he was worth about £75,000 after he sold everything in March. Revelle said he'd planned to have a friend videotape his bet it all spin, but Sky One Television decided it was worth a short reality series called Double or Nothing. For Minuteman News Service, this is Michael Stinson in Hawaii.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Ooh, Richard Clark really stung the bushies, didn't he? Clark, a longtime counterterrorism chief, recently broke silence to reveal that George W. himself, as well as such aides as Donnie Rumsfeld and Condi Rice, refused to take the al-Qaeda terrorist threat seriously prior to September 11th, instead focusing single-mindedly on Iraq, which posed no threat to the U.S. Even after al-Qaeda terrorists attacked us, Clark says the Bushites irrationally diverted our forces to Iraq. Clark bluntly says he's outraged to see Bush now using the symbols of the September 11th horrors as a campaign device when he did nothing to stop the attacks despite ample warnings. The Bushites have since waged a White House jihad against Clark, calling him a left-wing, Democrat-hugging, partisan sourpuss who is a disgruntled, politically motivated bureaucrat angry that he didn't get a higher job in the Bush regime, and worst of all, he's a friend of an advisor to John Kerry. So there you have it. Clark has no credibility to debate over. They wish. Clark is a registered Republican. He is a career national security official with 30 years of public service. So valued was his terrorism expertise that he was continued as a top White House security aide by Ronald Reagan, Daddy George Bush, Bill Clinton, and George W. Morton Abramowitz, a top intelligence appointee under Reagan, says bluntly, "I can only tell you I think Dick has enormous credibility, a first-class intellect, very dedicated, a serious player. You can't overlook what Dick is saying." What he's saying is shocking. Bush and his insiders knew that Iraq was not behind September 11th, yet they knowingly sent Americans to die there under false pretenses. Clark says, "I think for a commander-in-chief to allow that to happen is unconscionable." This is Jim Hightower saying, "The Bushites can try to smear Clark, but they're the ones with an indelible stain on them."
I wonder who this unexpected guest might be. Good afternoon.
A circus. That's one thing you don't want in your house. One thing you do want in your house is more versatile flooring with Plictanium plywood from Georgia Pacific. Unlike other subfloor materials which limit your flooring options, Plictanium allows you to use hardwoods, carpeting, vinyl, or ceramic tile. Plictanium plywood. Build it better.
It's night. You have heartburn. You want fast relief. Zantac works. Fast. When first used, Prilosec OTC works. Not so fast. Zantac works right when you need it.
Hello. Relief.
Prilosec's label says it may take 1 to 4 days to fully work. So, what would you choose?
Estimated time of relief, 1 to 4 days.
Prilosec? Nah. Zantac's for people who hate to wait, especially...
Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. It's the third hour of the Tom Hartman radio program, live coast to coast, border to border. Terrestrial radio stations from coast to coast, streaming from outer space on the Sirius satellite, beaming around the planet on radiopower.org. It's the it's Thursday afternoon. It's time for the it's our time that we consider things that we hadn't considered, that maybe we didn't even know that we needed to consider. You know, the old "you don't know what you don't know." Maybe you know what you did, and maybe everything you know is wrong.
You know that you're wrong, but you fear you're right. You suspect you're out of sync.
You think that you're out of your mind.
Everything you know is wrong.
Are you being spied on by a satellite, and does this represent a revenue opportunity? An interesting juxtaposition of questions. Harold Hughes seeks to answer them in his new book, Satellite Imagery for the Masses, How to Use and Profit from the Satellite Revolution. Harold, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Well, thank you very much, Tom.
It's Harold Howe, right?
It's pronounced Howe, right.
Right, okay, great. Tell me about this. Am I being spied on by a satellite?
Well, I don't know. How controversial are you? No, the fact is, no, you aren't being spied on. You know, there are a lot of people who are really paranoid. There's a lot of capability out there to spy on people, but whether they're specifically looking for you, I have no idea.
But if I wanted to look for somebody, I mean, from what I'm reading here, these surprising business opportunities for people, tell me about your book. What is the point of this?
Well, it's basically to make people aware of satellite imagery. It's really grown a lot in the last 10 years, and let people be aware of what it can do, what it can't do, and also how you can make some money from it.
Okay, what can it do?
What can it do or can't? I'm sorry.
What can we do with satellite image? Can I spy on you?
Well, you can look at my house and my property if you want.
Oh, really?
You know,
so I can see when you walk outside and when you drive away and things like that.
Well, you could see at the point in time when the satellite was overhead, you could, yeah. But by the time you get in that information, it'd be a lot easier just to get a private investigator to stand outside the house.
Yeah, unless I had a cruise missile or something, right?
Well, you know, I think that it's important also to realize that Hollywood has really hyped the spy satellite story too much. You know, you watch things like Enemy of the State, and you think there's satellites overhead all the time that can see, you know, who was Will Smith running through the streets, and that's not true. That's not how good they are, even the top secret ones.
So I thought, you know, I've read what are presented as statements of fact that you can read a license plate from a satellite, at least from the Department of Defense satellites.
Well, okay, you could see a satellite, you could see a license plate, but first of all, who put the license plate on their roof? Second of all, you know, there are places like Washington, D.C. where they have cameras that take pictures of cars speeding through red lights. And the problem is sometimes they have problems identifying the license number from 50 feet away. They aren't going to be able to do it that well from 500 miles away.
Well, it has to do with the quality of the lens.
That's a lot of hype, one of those urban legends.
I see. So then these satellites are not as fancy as the Department of Defense suggests they are.
Well, it's not as fancy as some of the people who talk like they're experts from the Department of Defense say they are. You know, there are very few people who really know who are talking. It's usually the talking heads who usually spout off about such things.
Okay. And who does this? Who is spying on us?
Well, okay, the government obviously has a lot of capability, but the fact is there's a lot of commercial satellite imagery out there that can be used. You know, if you're, let's say, for instance, you want to open up a swimming pool supply store, you might very well get a piece of satellite imagery of an area and see how many swimming pools are in the area.
And decide whether or not it's a good business opportunity. Okay,
that's right.
And these are from commercial satellites.
That's correct.
And how do I get access to this?
No, it's real simple. If you can go on the internet, you can go to several websites, and you can actually order it over the internet, and they'll deliver it to you online. All you need is a credit card.
And what's the average cost?
It depends. You know, some of the stuff you can get from the government is free, and then of course it goes up to, you know, maybe a couple dollars per square kilometer. It depends on how new it is, the resolution. You know, you get what you pay for, sort of.
Wouldn't the trend be toward if we've got this and this is that? I mean, this is something that 10 years ago was unthinkable. Isn't the trend toward more and more sophisticated and fancy spying by satellites?
Oh yeah, the resolution is incredible. I started in this in 1989, and at that time you had Landsat imagery, which the smallest thing you could see was about maybe 30 yards in diameter. Then you had Spot, the French satellite, which could see things 30 feet in diameter. That's all you had. Now you can see things about 2 feet in diameter.
Right. Our number, if any of our listeners have questions, is 1-866-889-8894. We're talking with Harold Howe, the author of Satellite Imagery for the Masses, How to Use and Profit from the Satellite Revolution. Harold, should we be concerned about this, the average person?
Well, I think there's a concern. One of the biggest concerns I have is how tax people are using it. The chances are your county right now is either using satellite imagery for taxes, for zoning, for permitting, or they've at least considered it.
But isn't that
a lot of places out there that will sit there and they can use a computer to look at imagery from last year and this year and see who's put additions onto their house.
Right, but they have the right, for better or for worse, they have the legal right to come over to my house and say, hey, you know, we're here with the county tax authorities or the city tax authorities, and we would like to inspect your house and determine what your property taxes should be. Isn't this a way of actually saving money for the government if they do that?
Well, yeah. Of course, you know, the government always uses that excuse for saving money or for better enforcement when they take away our rights.
So you see this as a taking away of our rights?
Well, you know, when government can spend can learn more about you, yeah, I'm a little concerned. I'm not exactly a big government fan, and I don't think most people are.
So on the one hand, you're saying, it sounds to me like you're saying, you know, gee, these satellites are out here and they're looking at us and this is a bad thing and we should be worried about it. And on the other hand, you're saying, hey, these satellites are out here and you can buy the images and you can use them to make money. There's a disconnect there, Harold.
No, there isn't. I'm more concerned with what the government is using satellites for than what my next door neighbor is.
Aren't you worried about what Citibank might use the satellite for?
You know, Citibank doesn't have a bunch of SWAT teams with assault rifles ready to shoot you down, so I'm not too worried about Citibank. I guess you are more concerned about Citibank than the U.S. government. Hey, that's your right.
Well, I wonder if there actually is a long history in the United States of corporations having SWAT teams that kill people. And you know, the history of labor in the United States is littered with it, for example. I mean, you know, Pinkerton started out as a private army.
Okay, so you're saying that Citibank has a SWAT team, right?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm not even implying that. I am saying that Citibank may know more about me than I would want them to know about me. And
well, they probably do, but they probably know more about your credit than you may want them.
Whoa.
The country's not going to really be something that's going to be of a concern to them.
Yeah, I think Citibank just tapped into your line here, Harold. If I pot this thing up, we get incredible feedback. Is something going on your end?
Nope.
Well, it seems to have gone away. Okay, well, any websites that people can go to find out more information about this?
Yeah, they're in my appendix, and let me be a little mercenary and let people know that they are welcome to buy this book, Satellite Imagery for the Masses, and let me give the 800 number. It's 800-380-2230, and in that book I do have an appendix that deals with places you can go to get it.
Great. Okay. Harold Howe, thank you very much, Harold. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you.
You know that you're wrong, but you fear you're right. You suspect you're out of sync.
You think that you're out of your mind.
Everything you know is wrong.
Yes, indeed, our Everything You Know Is Wrong segment. 16 minutes past the hour, 1-866-889-8894. If you would like to change the subject off satellite imagery, here's this report just in. U.S. outsources obesity to England, to India. We are supersizing rampant in Bangalore. The United States is rapidly outsourcing obesity to India, reports the Borowitz Report, and hopes to shed as many as 3 trillion pounds of unsightly cellulite annually, President George W. Bush announced today. In a speech to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce in Milwaukee, the president said that since most of the millions of jobs outsourced since he was elected president were extremely sedentary, quote, those jobs are now making the people of India fat instead of us, end quote. In the long run, the president said, the weight loss more than makes up for the job loss. In India, where U.S. companies have outsourced customer service jobs at a blistering pace in the last 3 years, workers confirmed that they have never been fatter in their lives. Sisarikana Bahati, 27, who works at a Verizon call center in Bangalore, said, before I got this job, I used to go out of my get out of my chair occasionally, but those days are long gone. The minute I'm off work, I head on over to the Olive Garden for all-you-can-eat breadsticks. A co-worker, Palak Mendy, 25, agreed, next to how can I help you, the words that I'm saying the most these days are, supersize me. Indeed, Indian President APJ Abdul Kalam recently said in a nationally televised address that India was in the throes of a supersizing epidemic, adding that the time has come for the Indian people to decide whether or not they want to look like Dick Cheney. Elsewhere, in a new poll released today, both President Bush and Senator John Kerry were defeated by the University of Connecticut. From Andy Borowitz. There's a Dave Borowitz. It's a BorowitzReport.com, B-O-R-O-W-I-T-Z, BorowitzReport.com. I wanted to get into aspartame in this segment a little bit, and we can also continue talking about Condi Rice if you want. I think, you know, this has been, you know, kind of well done to death. But this aspartame, it's interesting. On the 6th of April, just a couple of days ago, 2 days ago, there were lawsuits filed in 3 separate California courts against 12 corporations. The corporations being sued were PepsiCo, Coca-Cola, Bayer, the Dan & Company, William Wrigley Jr. Company, ConAgra Foods, Wyeth, NutraSweet Company, and Alitra Corp., which is the parent company of Kraft Foods and Philip Morris. And I find this fascinating, not just because the lawsuit was filed, but because this thing goes back to, oddly enough, Donald Rumsfeld. It's really a surprising story. The suits were filed in Shasta, Sonoma, and Butte County, California, and alleged that these food companies committed fraud and breach of warranty by selling products that contain aspartame. And the suit is alleging that aspartame, which the government says is safe, is actually, the suit is alleging that it's actually not safe, that it's actually a neurotoxin, and they suggest that 40% of it is aspartic acid, which causes lesions in the brains of mice. Now, how does Don Rumsfeld figure into this? I'll tell you right after this break. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 20 minutes past the hour. Stay tuned.
Hi, I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America, Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Hey, what does this word make you think of? Tchaikovsky.
Gesundheit. So what's the word?
No, that is the word.
He lost me.
All right, who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker. Before her, there was only soda crackers.
Maybe they're not getting enough art. Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music and Martha Graham's dance. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Setting up a radio station? Wondering what software to use? Listen to the words of Mike Chandler of WOBS in Florida talking about the Tune Tracker system.
I love the software. I mean, it is rock solid. It has not burped one single time. This thing has not stopped. And I tell you, I've got some software that I run at two of my other radio stations that cost tons and tons more. One I paid, I think, $1,500 for it. And then one system, which was the Arrakis DigiLink system, I paid $15,000 for it, but this rivals my $15,000 system.
As Mike Chandler said, the Tune Tracker system is rock solid. And the price? Only $349.95 for the pro version with traffic interface, and only $149.95 for the original Tune Tracker 2. Either way, you'll have a radio automation system that performs like systems costing thousands more. For more information, go to our website, www.tunetrackersystems.com. www.tunetrackersystems.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Cool, cool, glad you made it. Welcome to the world of entertainment. It's unlike any other game around. Cool, cool, glad you made it. Welcome to the world of entertainment. I hope you're ready, cause they're gonna knock it down, down, down.
And welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. You're in the middle of a vast radical metal conspiracy. Here we had Dr. John Olney back in 1970. This according to the National Justice League. a group involved in filing these lawsuits in three separate California courts about aspartame. They say back as far back as 1970, Dr. John Olney founded the field of neuroscience called excitotoxicity, when he did studies on aspartic acid, which makes up 40% of aspartame, and found it caused lesions in the brains of mice. They also point out that it liberates free methyl alcohol. This is also known as methanol, wood alcohol. The stuff that, the nasty stuff in moonshine. In 1983, they point out that it was approved for use in carbonated beverages, and today it's found over 5,000 drinks and medicines. What is the timeline? And this is really interesting. In 1980, an FDA Board of Inquiry, comprised of three independent scientists, this is from Rents.com, confirmed that aspartame might induce brain tumors. They were apparently looking at mice. And the FDA had actually banned aspartame, Rents.com points out, based on this finding. And then the chairman of Searle Pharmaceuticals, S-E-A-R-L-E, this fellow became chairman of Searle, and which was a manufacturer of aspartame, and he said that he was going to, quote, call in his markers, end quote, to get this compound approved by the federal government. His name was Donald Rumsfeld. On January 21st, 1981, now, this stuff was still illegal then, because the FDA was concerned that it would cause brain tumors. On January 21st, 1981, the day after Ronald Reagan's inauguration, Searle reapplied to the FDA for approval to use aspartame and as a food sweetener. And Reagan's new FDA commissioner, a fellow by the name of Arthur Hayes Hall Jr., appointed a five-person scientific board to look into it. Now, it looked like the five people that he appointed, two of them were saying, approve this stuff, and three of them were saying, don't. And so he appointed a sixth member to the commission. But the sixth member agreed with the don't side. And so Hall personally broke the tie at FDA in favor of aspartame. He, by the way, left the FDA under allegations of impropriety and then took a position, according to Rents.com, with Burston Marsteller, the chief public relations firm for both Monsanto and Searle. Since that time, he's never spoken publicly about this. It was 1977, Searle hired prominent Washington insider Donald Rumsfeld as its new CEO to try and turn the company around. He was the former member of Congress and Secretary of Defense in the Ford administration, brought in several buddies from Washington, D.C. In 79, the FDA looks into this. In 80, September 30th, 1980, they conclude that it has that they have not been presented with proof of reasonable certainty that aspartame is safe for use as a food additive. 81, Rumsfeld says he's going to make it happen. 80 in January 21st, Reagan is sworn in, and he brings in Donald Rumsfeld, and he brings in Arthur Hall Hayes Jr. to be the FDA commissioner. May 19th, 1981, they have this debate that I just told you about. June 15th, 1981, he overrules, and boom, this product, aspartame, also known as NutraSweet, is now legal. And I think this is going to be real interesting to follow, this lawsuit. Hopefully some good stuff will come out that will lay to rest the concerns that people have, or, you know, raise some legitimate scientific inquiry into this that will inform us further. It's a Tom Hartman radio program, 29 minutes past the hour. The True People's Radio.
Have you visited 100fires.com lately? If not, then you're missing out on thousands of books for a better world. Books about how you can make a difference, about the rights of workers, creating more livable communities, and about how we can stop large corporations from destroying our democracy. 100fires.com offers secure ordering, full searchability, gift certificates, and much, much more. That's 100fires.com. Books for a better world.
pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. An unreported bomb threat leaves three unions representing Northwest Airlines employees steamed. One plane was searched in Detroit, another was searched in Los Angeles, and a third in both Memphis, Tennessee, and Miami. Grievances were filed by the Professional Flight Attendants Association, the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, and the Aircraft Mechanics Fraternal Association. The unions want specific protocol for immediately informing airline employees of any threat.
Tyson Foods faces new unfair labor practice charges from two meatpacking plants. Workers at Tyson's Wallula, Washington facility vote on whether to decertify their union today. And leading up to the vote, Teamsters Local 556 claims Tyson offered people promotions and bonuses for voting no on the union and peppered the plant with stickers urging the same. Tyson's contract with the Teamsters in Washington State expires at the end of May. At the Tyson plant in Jefferson, Wisconsin, United Food and Commercial Workers Local 538 is asking the National Labor Relations Board to force Tyson to rehire workers that went on strike for nearly a year against a contract offer that cut their wages and benefits. As part of its settlement in January, Tyson promised to take back the strikers but reserved the right to put them in entry-level jobs. Two-thirds of them still await the call back to work. A petition to decertify the UFCW local at the Jefferson Packing House is already pending at the NLRB, filed by the replacement workers brought in during the strike. A ruling on that effort is expected before the end of the month.
More than 1,000 Rhode Island home care workers have the green light to join a labor union thanks to a ruling Tuesday by the State Labor Relations Board. Home child care providers are mostly women who care for up to 6 children in their homes or up to 8 with an assistant. These workers will now have 60 days to vote on whether or not to join the AFL-CIO Family Child Care Providers Union, gaining state benefits and a unified voice regarding working conditions.
Walmart's referendum to circumvent the city of Inglewood, California, and build a small retail village exempt from city oversight failed Tuesday. The company took its development to the ballot box after the Inglewood City Council overwhelmingly rejected it. Voter turnout was 29%. 60% said no.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Beyond plunging the federal budget into a record deficit, the Bush tax cuts shifted the tax burden significantly. According to United for a Fair Economy, corporate taxes have dropped 67% compared to a 17% increase in individual taxes. Meanwhile, states are shouldering more of the tax burden. Collectively, they've seen a 15% increase in their share of taxes.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Telling the truth that multinational corporations don't want you to know. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 1-866-889-8894. If you'd like to be on, Vin in Santa Fe has some thoughts on aspartame, I believe. Hey, Vin, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Nice to talk to you.
Thank you.
I'm not going to mention names or places, but I was a colleague of an individual who did some seminal research on aspartame in the 90s. And, you know, he found, as expected, that it changed brain chemistry significantly, and you'd expect that because it changes amino acid transport from the blood into the brain across the blood-brain barrier. And as you probably know, almost all neurotransmitters in the brain are derivatives of amino acids of one sort or another.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, his research strongly suggested that this stuff, you know, was going to have not only lesion effects that they saw in rats, but probably behavioral effects, since it did change brain chemistry. No, and that's the last milligram of aspartame I ever took.
Yeah.
After that point. And I think, you know, I think you and I have spoken about the FDA before. I think the FDA really failed on this one.
Well, the question then that gets you know, raised by industry on this is, okay, this was 81, right? That was 20 years ago, 22 years ago, 23 years ago. Where are the millions of victims if this stuff is so bad?
Well, but the point is that you don't, the victimization could be extremely subtle. The increase in behavioral problems in young children, it could have an effect on that. That's what he believed. And again, he could not show this directly in his research, but something that changes brain chemistry radically in another mammal, a rat, is likely to do so in humans as well. And you're taking a risk. It's when does the FDA step in and say, okay, this stuff is risky business because it could change brain chemistry enough to alter behavior in subtle ways that we wouldn't be able to measure real easily.
Yeah, and you know, the interesting thing is the interesting dynamic here is one of the big clarion calls of this administration is tort reform. Which is a fancy way of saying don't let people sue when they've been harmed by a product.
Right. We'll protect the pharmaceutical companies to the end.
Right. And well, not just the pharmaceutical company. I mean, right across the board.
Don't
let anybody sue anybody. And this, you know, a lawsuit has been filed now, and maybe bringing this stuff out. You know, we'll have to see. We'll have to see how it plays out. But it seems to me that number one, it would be useful to have a reexamination of Rumsfeld's role in bringing this stuff around, and you know, what was going on inside the FDA and the extent to which corporate America was influencing decisions made by the government, which should be we the people, you know, looking out for our interests.
Oh, we all need to know that, absolutely.
And secondly, the whole issue of the very aggressive attempts being made now by conservatives to limit the ability of individual Americans to find these things out using judicial processes, using legal processes. This is just wrong. Vin, do you based on what you know and what you're involved with, you say you won't use the product. And yet, again, even if the results are very subtle, I mean, there are people who suggest that sugar causes, you know, subtle and destructive effects. There are entire books about, you know, William Duffy's Sugar Blues. I mean, at what point do we start saying, hey, this is hysteria, and what point do we take these things seriously?
That's a tough call. It's a tough call. I think your point is the important point. It's corporate manipulation of government is the issue here.
Yeah, ultimately.
And, you know, it kind of relates to, I don't know if you discussed this question before, this whole thing with baseball uniforms. I'm sure you've heard of this. Baseball uniforms now are going to exhibit sponsors on the uniforms of individual players.
I don't know about this.
Yeah, I forget where I read it. I believe I read it either in the Washington Post.
You mean like NASCAR? Like the NASCAR guys? They
sort of like all that. I haven't seen any photos, but you know, apparently when the Yankees played in Japan, their uniforms displayed, you know, symbols of ExxonMobil, I think, was one of them, and I forget who the other corporations were. And, you know, the discussion is, you know, is this appropriate? And if you're a traditionalist, you don't want to see this in baseball. And, of course, the larger discussion is, you know, corporatism.
Yeah. Well, see, where that chafes me, I mean, I don't care if the teams are doing that, just like with NASCAR. I mean, you know, in fact, it may even become kind of a charming part of it. But when you have, for example, George W. Bush making a large part of his personal fortune off the city of Dallas using eminent domain to take land away from people and using taxpayer dollars to build a stadium which enhanced the value of his sports team and using his political connections to make it happen. And then this stadium, and then many of these stadiums around the country, which were paid for by tax dollars and the exploitation of government to make it happen. And then in those venues you have corporate logos hanging out. And corporate logos in our schools now. I mean, this is the point where I draw the line. If a private team wants to wear logos, fine. But, you know, why are we subsidizing them with tax dollars?
Exactly. And I guess that's why this bears watching, I guess, is my point.
Yeah. Okay. Good point, Vin. Thanks for the call. I appreciate
Thanks, Tom.
It. Good to hear from you. 20 minutes before the hour, it's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 1-866-889-8894. If you'd like to opine on the issues of the day, Doc in Bastrop, Texas is on the line. Hey, Doc.
Hello, Tom. Just a little food for thought here. You know who Frank Zappa was, right?
I know who what?
Beg your pardon?
I'm sorry. We've got a semi-bad connection here, Doc. Try it again.
Okay.
Do I know who what is?
Okay, well, he had an interesting theory. I don't know where he got his information about a Spartan concerning the Gulf War sickness. He said there were pallets of that stuff sitting out in the sun at 120 degree temperature, and it was his theory that he got from somewhere that this may have been one of the causes of Gulf War sickness.
Right, because the theory being that the aspartame, when it was exposed to the heat of the desert sun, was breaking down and converting itself into methyl alcohol and also, as I recall, formaldehyde.
I'll throw that out at you.
Yeah, okay. Thanks, Doc. I appreciate the call. I don't know if that's a Vanishing Hitchhiker story or not. I certainly remember, you know, reading it. It's all over the Internet. It'll be interesting. Let me do a little research on this. Maybe we can find out something about it. One of the, you know, moving along here, I've got a couple of other things that I wanted to share with you. And it's Richard in Australia sent a very thoughtful email to me about Australia's experience with preferential voting. I had mentioned, we were talking a couple of days ago about instant runoff voting, and I pointed out that the United States, the electoral system in the United States does not allow for third parties. And this was something that the founders really anguished over. And the electoral systems of many other countries do allow for third parties because they have proportional representation, where, you know, if a party gets 30% of the vote, they get 30% of the seats in the House, in Parliament, or whatever it may be called in that particular country. And that in Greece, the United States, Canada, the United Kingdom, and Australia, we have variations that are not as democratic as full proportional representation. And that in Australia, they had fixed that by going with something similar to instant runoff voting. And Richard sent me a note with a really good explanation of this. He said, just a small point of correction on Australia's experience with what they call preferential voting. He said, the introduction of preferential voting goes back to 1892, when it was introduced for voting to the Queensland State Parliament, when Australia comprised a number of state colonies. It was introduced at the federal level for the national government in 1919. A variant of optional preferential voting was introduced much more recently. He says, I'm not sure the exact date, but that could be the 15 years ago you mentioned. And this is like the most recent iteration of it. And he said, the standard preferential voting required the voter to enter a valid preference against all candidates standing. So you'd have, say, five candidates, and you'd say, okay, this candidate is my choice number one, the next candidate is my choice number four, the next candidate is my choice number five, the next candidate is my choice number two, the next candidate is my choice number two, number three. He says the optional component means that one need only mark not less than one, but not more than the total number of candidates. Keep up the great work. Thank you, Richard, for the email and for setting me straight. Interesting that it's been around for quite some time. The Boston Globe reports on George Bush. This is a small thing, but it's funny. President Bush has a penchant for dishing out good-natured insults, and usually the victims laugh along. But Sammy Briary didn't seem much amused when Bush fired one at her yesterday. This is from yesterday's newspaper, so it would have been the day before. Bush was wrapping up a town hall-style appearance at South Arkansas Community College when he said he's talking to this woman, Sammy Briary. He says, you and my mother go to the same hair dye person. She's got a blondish hairstyle. The newspaper notes it bore little resemblance to Barbara Bush's shock of white hair. The audience in the gymnasium laughed, but Briary smiled and then replied firmly, Mr. Bush, President Bush, I'm a natural blonde. Oh, yes, Bush agreed. She said, I am just a natural blonde. And he shrugged. He says, I couldn't help myself. Sorry. And with that, he turned to Bob Watson, superintendent of the El Dorado Public Schools, who'd opened the meeting by inadvertently insulting Bush, and perhaps inadvertently. And Bob Watson then says, President, and Bush says how quickly they forget. So, I don't know, and on it goes. George, you know what, George Bush's penchant for handing out shortcut names for people is something I always found fascinating. He gives people these nicknames, and in fact Doonesbury did a spoof on it today. You know, shall I come up with Stretcher as a nickname for Richard Clark because he's stretching the truth? I don't know. Let's talk for a few minutes about jobs. I really want to get back to this issue, which we started on yesterday in the first hour of the program, and it's an important one. We have companies, more than 60% of U.S. corporations not owing any federal taxes for 1996 to 2000, and yet people are being wiped out. And I got a couple of emails and inquiries, you know, about the Taft-Hartley Act. Give us a little more information on the Taft-Hartley Act. And so I want to just summarize this. You know, what did the Taft-Hartley Act lay out? What does the Taft-Hartley Act suggest? It started in 1935, first of all, with the Wagner Act, which created the National Labor Relations Board, and it was also called the National Labor Relations Act. And basically what the 1935 Wagner Act did was it legalized unions in a way that made it difficult for employers to lock them out, to block them, to stop them. In fact, it absolutely, just like the laws passed back in the 18th century, legalized corporations. Essentially, from the founding of the country, we said, okay, it's legal for people to go into business together, to create a corporation. What this act did was it said it is legal to create a union, and you can't stop it unless you can prove that it's doing something corrupt or harmful. The same way that we say about corporations, you know, if you can prove that a corporation is corrupt or harmful, you can stop it. And then in 1947, 12 years after the passage of the Wagner Act, comes the Taft-Hartley Act, introduced by Taft and Hartley. Taft was the son of the president, a wealthy Republican senator, and Hartley was a congressman. And the Taft-Hartley Act does the following, and I didn't get into all these details, and I think that this is important to just, you know, wrap it up and lay it out. Number one, it authorized states, individual states, to pass laws that are sometimes referred to as right-to-work laws. And basically what the laws do is say that you can benefit from the company being unionized and still not be a member of the union. Now, the Wagner Act, the basic philosophy was, okay, if a union is going to go in, if you're going to have a union in a business, and that union is going to negotiate wages on behalf of all the employees, then those employees all should be members of the union. Right? I mean, if they don't want to be members of the union, then they shouldn't work there. And, you know, this has been a touchy, I don't want to call it a moral issue, it's a freedom issue for a lot of people for a lot of years. I mean, there are people who say, well, you know, that right to work makes sense, that, you know, if I don't want to be a member of the union, but I want to work for the business, that I should be able to. But what happens is that those people then are not paying their union dues, and they're not participating in the union activities. The union ends up diminishing in power over time, and the ability of the union to. But they are benefiting over the short term from the union contracts that are being negotiated, and the result ultimately is that they enjoy the benefits of membership in the union without paying the union dues. And these right-to-work laws allow employers to basically play employees off against each other. And that's absolutely what happened. It's absolutely what started happening. They outlawed the closed shop, the Taft-Hartley law, where you had to be a member of a union before getting a job. Now, this goes back to the Guild days. And again, this is something that I think reasonable people can disagree on. But the closed shop was the idea that, and again, starting in the 14th century, I mean, you go back and you look at the history of the Masons, you know, who were the stonemasons, they built the cathedrals of Europe, that there was this idea that if we don't stand together, Ben Franklin said after they signed the Declaration of Independence, if we don't hang together, we shall all hang separately. And there was this idea that if we're going to be a block as labor, if we're going to negotiate with the company, then we all must be members of this thing. And Taft-Hartley said, no, it doesn't have to be that way. The Taft-Hartley Act defined employee, for the purpose of the act, as excluding supervisors and independent contractors. In other words, if you were a supervisor in a company, or if you were an independent contractor working for a company, you were no longer considered an employee. You couldn't become part of the union. which reduced the number of people eligible for unionization, for union membership, which hurt the unions. See, this is just an assault on unions. A couple other points. I'll wrap them up right after this break. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 10 minutes before the hour.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order two bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get two bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive two free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value, absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
We the people have the inalienable and natural right to self-determination. We the people have the right to our true citizenship. We the people have the right.
Tom Hartman has a new illustrated book called We the People, A Call to Take Back America.
You mean Tom Hartman has a comic book out?
No, it's an illustrated book that tells the history of America's takeover by multinational corporations and what we as citizens can do to take it back.
Illustrated? You mean it has pictures?
Well, it's illustrated the same way a comic book is. Easy and fun, but it's also about a serious topic, the survival of democracy.
How do I get a copy?
It's in bookstores across America and online. You can also find it at buzzflash.com. There's more information at www.tomhartman.com or by calling 1-800-765-1319.
What was that number again?
1-800-765-1319.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitsky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitsky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now. 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Ski resorts could be left high and dry in a warmer climate. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. If forecasts for global warming are correct, many of Europe's most popular ski resorts are likely to go bankrupt in the next few decades. That's according to a report presented in December at the World Conference on Sport and Environment. The report says the ski season will grow shorter and the snow line will move higher into the mountains. In Switzerland, as many as 60% of all ski resorts could close in the next 30 to 50 years. One researcher says the scenario is not quite so bleak in North America. Daniel Scott is a geographer at the University of Waterloo in Ontario, and he studies recreation and tourism. He says ski resorts in eastern North America will face warming temperatures and less snow, but he says they're better equipped than European resorts to deal with the problem.
In Europe, they don't have the sort of extensive snowmaking systems that we do have here in eastern North America, where every ski area has almost 100% coverage of their skiable terrain in snowmaking.
Scott says snowmaking is not as widespread at resorts in western states and provinces, and it's not clear how they'll deal with warmer winters. Scott says resorts that try to compensate for a shortage of natural snow will see expenses go up.
They'll have to make more snow, which will have costs associated with it. I think the average ski area in the Northeast is something like $750,000 US a year. So it's a substantial, you know, amount of money. And if you're doubling the amount of snow that you have to make, well, your costs go up accordingly.
Scott says the news about Europe's ski resorts has drawn a lot of attention, and many resort owners are now looking at their abilities to weather environmental change. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman radio program where despair is not an option. Get active. Get political. Get involved. Get out there. Get on the phone. 866-889-8894. Ann in Sarasota's on the line. Hey, Ann, what's up?
Hi. Real quick, I was watching some of the hearings this morning with Rice, and I just wanted to make a quick comment that I noticed she deflected questions more than she answered them.
I noticed that, too.
And I also wanted to comment on her attitude. This is a serious topic. A lot of people died, and she was just kind of smiley, perky, and I just wanted to, you know, reach up there and shake her and say, girl, this is not a time to be bouncy, perky. This is a serious topic. Act serious.
Well, I think that she, in her defense, I think that she was trying to be personable. I mean, you know, she didn't want these people to beat up on her. She was trying to, I think she was doing the best job that she knew how to do. I mean, you know, she's not on my team, as it were. I mean, I thought that she was doing more covering up than illuminating, and the job of this panel was to illuminate. She was part of a large conspiracy to do a massive cover up. That is, you know, getting the in exchange for her testimony, the administration saying that nobody else has to testify under oath, and that when Bush testifies, he gets to have Dick Cheney sit next to him, and they're not going to force Dick Cheney to drink water while George Bush is talking.
I have another quick question.
Sure.
How come Bush isn't going to be forced to do this under oath, but about what happened that killed a lot of people in our country, a serious breach of security, yet they made Clinton go under oath to answer a question about a stain on a dress?
Yeah. Well,
why isn't somebody screaming about this?
I think a lot of people are screaming about it, Ann, and the answer, of course, to your question is because the Republicans control the House and the Senate. I mean, that's the real easy answer. Anything that's going to, you know, the congressional investigation into this was not given subpoena power, was not given the power to force people to testify under oath, and the reason why is because the leaders, you know, Bill Frist in the Senate and Tom DeLay in the House of Representatives and Denny Hastert would not allow it to happen. That's the bottom line. So.
Well, looks like we need to go out and do some serious voting come November, don't
there,
we?
There you go, Ann. Well said.
Great.
Thank you. Thanks for the call. And just to very quickly wrap up the Taft-Hartley Act, it also permitted employers to petition for union certification elections whenever they want, which means that employers can screw around with the process of creating a union, which Walmart has been playing like a fiddle. And bottom line, time to repeal Taft-Hartley. And get in politicians who will do so. By the way, Ralph Nader has come out in favor of repealing Taft-Hartley, as has Dennis Kucinich and a number of other Democrats. It'll be interesting. We're going to have Bernie Sanders on tomorrow. We'll ask him about this as well. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Thanks to Louise for producing the show today. Thanks to Brad Walrod in New York for the music. Thanks to the folks in our chat room for showing up. Thanks to you for listening. Join us tomorrow, same time, same place.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. I have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory